Welcome to another episode of Skip to the End. And it's episode 28, which is episode one of phase two, if you want to look at it like that.
If we're looking at the Marvel terms.
Yeah, in terms of the MCU. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
And on this episode, we've got lots for you. First of all, our main review is going to be Legend, which is Ridley Scott's 1985 fantasy cult classic starring a young Tom Cruise.
Did you not get the notes?
What do you mean?
We're not doing that. It's the new one. Tom Hardy?
What?
You've seen the wrong wall, haven't you?
Yep.
We have to do some serious editing.
Where did you even see that?
It's
what
a classic.
Cinema showing it?
You'd be surprised.
What cinema did
there
you
are
go
some
in?
Cinemas where it's just on constantly.
You went in and said, I'll have one for Legend, please.
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Oh.
Bugger.
We're going to have to do some serious editing.
We'll figure it out. As well as that, we're also going to be rewatching Battlefield Earth.
I'm not going to just get on with
it. Yes, yeah, let's move on. We're going to be skipping back in time to 2002. We're also going to talk about our top three British films of all time, which is going to be a bit of fun. And also, talking about a bit of fun, we've got a brand new quiz feature. Mark, what's it called?
Fan Movie Fortunes.
Fan Movie Fortunes, yeah. For those of you who didn't hear the explanation last time, we'll leave it. We'll just hold on. You know, wait with bated breath. We'll get there shortly. We're going to be playing Fan Movie Fortunes later. We'll take listener questions, competitions, all that kind of shit. So let's get started.
It's a long time ago now, lads. 3 weeks since we recorded the last episode.
Yeah.
But I'm hopefully that you all remember the topic. It was top three British films.
Mm-hmm.
It was really interesting last time when we did World Cinema, but I thought, let's bring it a bit closer to home. Ben, fire away. What's one of your favourites?
I'm going to go with one that you may not have heard of or may not have seen. I don't know, because it's not that big of a film. It's called Gangster Number One.
Never seen it.
Actually, no. I've heard of it, but I've never seen it.
It's a British gangster film from, I think, sort of the late 90s, early 2000s. And it stars Malcolm McDowell. It starts in the present, and he's sort of the top boy in a British firm, you know, top gangster. And then the film goes back to the 60s, where you see him as a young man played by Paul Bettany. And it was the first thing I ever saw Paul Bettany in. And he's brilliant in it. He's really intense at playing this young gangster and how he comes up through the ranks and becomes top boy. And it's a brilliant film, was really underrated. You know, I think it got reasonable reviews, but didn't do great box office. And I think a lot of people have forgotten about it or don't know of it. But go out and seek out Gangster Number One. It was, as I say, it's the first thing I ever saw Paul Bettany in. And it was one of those moments where, you know, when you instantly like a guy, you like their work so much, you'll watch him in anything.
Yeah.
I now know if a film's got Paul Bettany in, I'm going to enjoy at least his part of it. I'd watch him take a shit, frankly, I think. He is great in this film especially. So if you don't know, go and check out Gangster Number One, a really, really excellent British gangster film.
Wow.
I'd love to elaborate, but I haven't seen
it. No, I can't say anything. I trust in you and I will go and watch this.
Check it out, yeah.
I'm quite a big fan of Paul Bettany as well.
Mm. Honestly, this will be the best thing you've seen him do. If you go away and watch this, it's his best work, I think.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Adam, try and pick something I've heard of so I can comment.
Well, to be honest with you, I'm actually going to start on something I've already mentioned before. We did top indie films a couple of episodes back, and This Is England.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, good choice.
I've spoken about it before, so I thought I might as well get that one out of the way. Absolutely amazing film. It's odd. I kind of don't really want to talk about it too much because, as I say, I mentioned it. Go back and listen to that episode.
Yeah.
But it is a great film. It's all about kind of the racial tensions that were rising in England in the 80s under the Conservative government, under Thatcher, during the Falklands War. Lots of people going off dying for their country. Immigrants were coming over. And it caused quite a lot of tension in, you know, certain areas such as the North. And you know, it even led to sort of race riots and things like that eventually. But the National Front obviously rises up during that time, and it's a very, very powerful piece by Shane Meadows.
It is, and they've made several TV series based on it since, haven't they? And I know I was reading something the other day that I think they're gearing up for the next one.
This Is England 90.
Yeah, and I think Meadows was saying that they wanted to try and get Stephen Graham back. Is it Combo? Is that
Combo,
his
yeah.
But Stephen Graham's an incredibly busy guy, you know. Scorsese uses him quite a bit, so yeah, he's hard to get.
Obviously had quite a high-profile role as Al Capone in Boardwalk Empire.
Yeah, yeah.
He's very well thought of on both sides of the pond.
He is, yeah. Yeah.
But nice. Yeah, if they could get him back for it, then it would have been fantastic. Mm-hmm. He does come back, I think it's This Is England 86 he appears in.
Yeah.
It might be 84 or 86. I think it might be both. I think he appears in one episode at the end of 80, 6 and a couple of episodes of 84 as well.
I need to blitz those. I want to just sit and plough through all the TV series.
Yeah, they're very good short series. Very, again, very Shane Meadows, very powerful, very gritty.
Yeah.
You know, very steeped in real life.
Yeah, yeah. Gritty is a great way to describe Shane Meadows.
Everything he does is just dripping in real life.
Yeah.
Nice. So hopefully you both would have seen this. My first one is A Hard Day's Night by the Beatles.
No. Oh, I know of it. Yeah. I'm familiar with it.
I've seen it.
Richard Lester, 1964. So it's basically a mock documentary about the day in the life of the Beatles. I wasn't a massive fan of the Beatles growing up. Everyone kind of jumped on the bandwagon. I appreciate they're one of the biggest bands ever, and they deserve all the credit they get. But this film I watched last year, and I was just laughing all the way through. It was really good, captured Britain for me. Mm. And it made me fall in love with the Beatles. And after watching that, I then went and listened to Abbey Road and the soundtrack to it. And I just think it's one of the best films I've seen. And it just makes me, it just summarizes Britain perfectly for me.
I like to think that he picked this one based off the fact that it was one of my favourite soundtracks from about episode 3 or 2.
So it was, yeah.
Back in the day. Yeah. God, that seems so long ago.
So would you consider yourself a Beatles fan now in
now.
Adult life?
Yeah, yeah, I've just left it far too late. And last year went a bit obsessed and bought loads of their early work and just worked my way through each album. Just basically had it on solidly for a few weeks and just fell in love with it.
Yeah. Don't be too hard on yourself, because anyone who was born after like 1969 left it too late to be a Beatles fan.
yeah,
true. I've never really got into them. It's not my cup of tea generally. That said, I think Revolver is an unbelievable
album. It's an incredible album.
Yeah.
Did you hear Keith Richards this week going on about how he thinks Sgt. Pepper's is a piece of shit? I think in the same interview he also said that Metallica and Black Sabbath are jokes and that rap music is pointless. Now, I kind of agree with him on rap music, I must admit. But, you know, no one gives a shit what you have to say,
no.
You 80-year-old twat.
Yeah.
Isn't he Pirates of the Caribbean 4 as well?
Yeah.
Well, because Johnny Depp based the character off him, didn't he?
Yeah, he did actually. Yeah, he said, yeah.
The least said about that twat, the better.
I mean, The Hard Day's Night is... I enjoy it as a film, as a piece, but I personally wouldn't put it in my top three.
Good.
Good. I don't want you in my club.
Yeah. Yeah, so really, it's just for the fact that it made me fall in love with the Beatles, and it's just really good fun, and you can see it's before they went so massively insane. Mm. It's just really good to see them and their personalities, and you can't not love them. Yeah. George Harrison's absolute god.
At this point, our regular listeners will know that we have sort of musical interludes between sections. Let's not use the Beatles.
No, don't worry.
Because that will cost us dear.
And Ringo is all about suing the shit out of everyone.
Yeah.
But this is the same guy that's now advertising Skechers trainers at
So I'm not sure whether he is or not.
Yeah.
I'm not sure whether Ringo does sue the shit out of everyone.
Oh, no.
No.
He may sue. Some people may not sue anyone. We don't know. Let's not make any sort of rash judgments.
Wild accusations.
Yeah, of course.
About Thomas the Tank Engine.
Phase 2, episode 1, cut. Come on then, pick something that I've heard of.
Okay, I'm going to go with Eastern Promises.
Yeah. Nice.
Which is a Canadian-British co-production, David Cronenberg film starring Viggo Mortensen. It's set in London, it's based in London. It's an absolutely brilliant film, and I think I've evangelised about this film in the past. And had you guys seen it, or have you gone and seen it since?
I've not managed to see it yet, no.
I've seen it.
Yeah, and it's a phenomenal film. I love Viggo Mortensen, he's another one who's just magnetic to me. I'll watch him anything. This is...
Lord of the Rings?
Do you know what? I even did watch Lord of the Rings. As much as I despise that whole thing, I watched Lord of the Rings purely because he was in it, and he was the one interesting thing in it. Like the two dwarves climbing up a hill for 9 hours, not interested. But him with his big sword, I'm down with it.
Cool.
And Sean Bean was in it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, didn't last long, but
he never does.
Poor Sean. Said his wife, but no.
So I will watch him in anything, and I love him specifically in Eastern Promises. I guess it's sort of borderline whether you class it as a British film. It was.
You can say it whatever you want.
I think the fact that it's set in Britain and it was co-financed with British money, it counts as a British film.
Has he done any films recently? I can't think of...
Cronenberg or Mortensen.
Yeah. I can't think he's actually done anything.
He did another one with Cronenberg after that, which, where he played Sigmund Freud, I think. And I think Fassbender was in it as well. And it didn't.
But I miss seeing him on screen.
He didn't get particularly good notices, and I've not seen it. But I don't think I've seen him.
I want to see him back.
He is superb.
Get him in the room too.
The Road he was in as well.
He was in The Road, yeah.
So depressing.
Dark film from a dark, dark book.
Yeah.
Cool.
Well, Mark mentioned the Beatles not too long ago there. And he specifically mentioned George Harrison. So, Life of Brian.
Mm. Nice.
Now, anyone who thinks that might be a slightly tenuous link, it's not. George Harrison does appear in it. He actually sort of financed the end of the film, I believe, after they ran out of money while they were filming. It's a Monty Python film. It is quintessentially British in the way it tells its story. Mm-hmm. It is a absolute piss take on the story of Christ, although it's not necessarily. It's Christ was born on the same day as Brian.
Yeah.
And people mistake Brian as the saviour. It is arguably one of the funniest films I've ever seen.
Yeah, I agree. It's up there in that sort of Spinal Tap category of legendary, untouchable comedies.
I've not seen this film for years. I need to have a...
You need to watch this again.
I've been there for so long.
I was about to go mental then, because I thought you were going to say, I haven't seen this
no,
film.
No, I've got it. I love it.
Turn off the microphone.
It must have been about 10 years since I've seen this film.
I think some of the best things in the film, I mean, it's quintessential Monty Python humour, as I said. There are absolute bits of genius and absolute bits of just delusion. Mm-hmm. When he's running away and he ends up in an alien spaceship cartoony, being travelled away, and you just have no idea what's going on for about 30 seconds, which sums up Monty Python completely.
Although it's weird, because I love Life of Brian, and I also like Holy Grail quite a bit as well, but I've never really been a fan of the sketch show. Their short form work doesn't really do it for me. Obviously there are famous sketches like the parrot sketch and so on that are funny, but if I sit and watch a half an hour episode, it doesn't really grab me. I don't go back and revisit it, whereas I will watch Life of Brian every few months.
I think Monty Python's Flying Circus is remembered more fondly than it actually was.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think if you watch now for something completely different, you generally get all the best stuff from Flying Circus in that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
But Life of Brian is an absolute classic film.
Yeah.
Stuff, blessed are the cheesemakers and stuff like that. If you've not seen it, go and watch it.
I love the argument about we're the people's front of Judea. Yeah. Fuck off, we're the Judean people's front.
And where's that? Why do you care so much about women? I want to be one. Why? I want to have children. You haven't got a womb. Where's a fetus going to gestate? In a box? Just some fantastic.
I'm watching this tonight.
Yeah, Monty Python humour all the way. So it has to be in the top three.
My next one. Spookily, I wrote this list before yesterday's news. Trainspotting.
Oh, yeah.
So we've obviously had the announcement that it's official that I think Danny Boyle's confirmed his next film is going to be Trainspotting 2. And frighteningly, next year it'll be 20 years since that film came out.
Wow.
The soundtrack itself is fantastic. You always think that lager, it goes on whenever I think of that film. But it's just, I love Ewan McGregor in that film. Robert Carlyle, one of the best.
Begbie. Oh,
what a great character.
Sorry to interrupt you, but just while we're talking about Begbie, you're going to have to bleep this, but it's, to me, probably the greatest line ever written in any film ever. It was fucking obvious that that was going to fuck some. That nice. Is my favourite line that Begbie says, especially in his thick Scottish brogue.
So good. Sick Boy, obviously, is absolutely fantastic character. It's just a really good, well-made film that, at the time, felt like the world had changed overnight. Everyone was talking about it. Everyone was talking about that scene with the baby up the ceiling, which is harrowing to watch.
It's absolutely
terrifying. I always think of the scene when he goes downstairs and he shit himself in the night and they're all arguing about putting it in the wash and it just goes over the whole family.
Yeah.
But just that iconic scene of him actually going into the toilet. It's unbelievable filmmaking.
Or the scene when he ODs and he sinks into the carpet and it's
incredible.
Such a perfect day.
It's so good. And I don't really know how I feel about the fact that there's going to be a sequel. I don't think it needs one.
Have you read the book? Have you read Porno?
Yes.
The follow-up. It's a good book, and I think there's a good film
it. It's just 20 years later. It's going to be all the original cast. I don't know.
I like the fact that it's going to be Danny Boyle, that it's not just some other div who's jumping on the bandwagon.
Yeah.
So it's going to be of a piece. It's going to be thematically, you know, connected and all that kind of shit.
And you can't imagine he'd have signed up for it if he doesn't have a vision to do it.
No, and the thing is, he's been saying, ever since the book was published, Porno's probably 10 years old now. Ever since it was published, he's been saying, I want to do this, I'd like to do this. So he's had plenty of time to think about how he wants to do it. So I'm really excited for it.
See what happens. But Ben, final one for you.
I'm going to finish off with a comedy. One of my comedy icons is Armando Iannucci. He created things like The Day to Day and The Thick of It. And then he did a movie spin-off of The Thick of It called In the Loop, which I think is one of the standalone funniest pieces of satire that's ever been committed to celluloid. It's about sort of a fictional escalation of a potential war with a nameless Middle Eastern country. It has politicians on both sides of the Atlantic, you know, flailing wildly. It's typical Iannucci satire and wordy humour and just filthy language as well, which is always fun for me. It's got Peter Capaldi in it as Malcolm Tucker, who is the indelible character from The Thick of It. Just a brilliant film. Steve Coogan as well has got a sort of a cameo in there. Great cast, hilariously funny. Have either of you guys seen In the Loop?
I'm really sorry to piss you off, but I've never seen The Thick of It.
You've never even seen the thick of
it? No, and my friend at work, Nick, constantly says to me, fucking watch it. Yeah. He's crying out loud, yeah. So I'm going to do it. But yeah. I've got a pile that needs going through
your
first.
Your piles?
Yeah, I've got cream. But no, I'm going to work my way through the pile.
Yeah. It's a shame that the early episodes of The Thick of It, the main character was played by a convicted paedophile. And that's, you know, that's not...
Ian Watkins?
Nope.
Oh.
That's, you know, I can't be sued for that because he was actually convicted as a paedophile, the guy who was the main character in it. And then they replaced him with Rebecca Front, who Armando had worked with in things like The Day-to-Day, and she's even better than the paedo was. Brilliant show. Catch up with it, Mark. Get involved.
I'm going to. Is there loads of them?
I've never seen it either.
There's not that many. I think there's about four series.
Okay.
But there's probably only sort of like six episodes. It's British, so there's only like six episodes to go. You could blaze it in a day and then build up and watch the film, because In the Loop is super.
I've heard this mentioned and I need to do it. It's on the list and everyone says, like, if you love this, you love that, Mark, you'll love it. And I'm going to do it.
And James Gandolfini's in it as well, playing like an American... I think he's like a top brass soldier. It's just brilliant. You've got to watch it. Gabe from The Office, Adam, isn't it? Zach Woods.
Sold.
Yeah.
No, I definitely need to watch that. I mean, I like Mark, I've never seen The Thick of It. It's been one of those things that's been on my list for about probably 6-7 years now to watch.
Yeah.
And with our busy schedules, we rarely get around to watching things films, we'd like to.
I just, you know,
it seems.
For my money, Armando Iannucci is our greatest satirist since the sort of the early 80s when you had things like Not the 9 o'clock News.
Yeah.
He took that baton and ran with it, and he's the best we've got. And then he went overseas and did Veep, which is like an Americanized version of it, dealing with the office of the vice president. So he's a god to me, Iannucci.
Wow. Adam, for you.
My last one, quite simple. Shaun of the Dead.
Surprise.
If you put zombies in a film, I'll watch it. If you put zombies in a great film, it is an amazing film.
A rom-zom-com.
It is. It's just, it has that right. I mean, we all love space, and it has that kind of space humour to it. It's very down-to-earth as well. Edgar Wright does a fantastic job in anything except The World's End.
What's the name? I'm telling you. They stuck his name on for the sake of it. I'm telling you.
Simon Pegg, Nick Frost.
Yeah.
It's a dream combo. They just nail it.
And
nail
Peter Serafinovich, he's never really spoken about in this film, but what a fantastic role he plays.
Why am I blanking? Who's Serafinovich in this?
Pete. The very pissed off housemate.
Oh, of course he is. Yeah. And then he turns into a zombie in the bathroom, doesn't he? Yeah.
You shot me in the balls, Tim. Like I said, no hard feelings. But yeah, amazing.
Dwayne Benzie.
Yeah, so good. One day we're going to do a space special.
I'd love to.
Big time.
Obviously we've got Jessica Stevenson cameoing in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those films that it's so easy to watch. It's so good, but it's so easy. You can just put it on in any situation and sit there watching it.
It is on all the time.
Yeah.
It's on ITV2 every day, every hour of every day.
But I absolutely love it. It was in my list of top five before we changed them on the last episode. Unfortunately, it didn't make the cut, but it definitely gets some love here.
Big time.
Cool. My final choice from 2009, Duncan Jones's Moon.
I nearly had that. I was so close to putting that in.
I don't think there's a better sci-fi film that's been made in Britain in the last 20 years for me. Sam Rockwell, masterpiece in this.
Yeah.
I don't understand when people hate this film. I don't get
it. Who hates it?
Some people out there, it's a bit Marmite. Read on the net. People are like, oh, it's shit.
Who? Give us names.
Names.
Hawkboy83 at... Yeah, but these people are clueless. It's an absolute masterpiece. It looks like a sci-fi movie should look. I believe it looks better than Interstellar. It's perfection. Yeah. And Sam Rockwell delivers... It's pretty much 90% of him throughout the whole film.
Yeah.
I'm not going to tell you what happens. Go and watch it right away. Pause this podcast and let us know you've seen it, because it's beautiful.
Is it Kevin Spacey as the voice of Gertie as well?
So good. But I love that film, and it never gets enough credit.
Yeah.
And I love the fact it's British.
No, it doesn't. It's very odd, actually, that Moon doesn't get any credit, really, from a lot of the wider public.
Yeah,
it flew under the radar.
It's like a little secret film.
People loved it.
Yeah, critically, people loved it. And in the industry, they did. That's why people were talking about Duncan Jones as, like, you know, he could be the next big thing. So I think people in the know got it, but the public at large didn't so much, which is a shame, because it is great.
Amazing. Mm. So, Adam, I believe it's your turn to set the next topic.
Yes, it is. It's a rather interesting one. I've been thinking about what we've covered off so far. So we've covered off things like best director, best actress, best actor, best films, best sci-fi films, things like that. So I was thinking that how can we mix it up a bit? I want your best, your top three one-hit wonders. This can either be a director, an actor, or a screenwriter that has put in one good performance, one good bit of direction, and everything else they've done hasn't been.
So either they've done one great thing and everything else has been shit, or they've only done one thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's really cool. I like that.
So is it basically top three one-hit wonders?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice.
Love it.
The Chumbawamba of the movie industry.
So have we had anything interesting from the social media?
We have. We've had absolutely loads. And I've tried to basically get everyone that's new on board to skip to the end to feature in phase two.
Oh,
it's been absolutely loads, so I've got as many as I can. So Stuart Howard at StuartHoward74, Hot Fuzz, strange choice.
Great film.
Trainspotting and Dead Man's Shoes.
Yeah.
Fantastic film. Nancy at Cheeky_Maggie, Distant Voices, still lives. I've never seen that.
No.
Excalibur, never seen that.
Nope.
And my mum's favourite film, Brief Encounter. Great film. Don't look at me as if to say something dodgy.
Oh, your mum's favourite.
Yes.
Oh, I thought you meant she'd put it's her mum's
favourite. Oh, yeah, no, my mum's. Adam at the Tonzi. Lavender Hill Mob.
Okay.
Hard Day's Night. And this is a tough one. Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that film has a great reputation based on how outrageous it was at the time. I don't think it's necessarily a great film.
Nick Staniforth, which is the same at Nick Staniforth. Dead Man's Shoes, The Descent, and Hot Fuzz, but then came back to us and said, can I change The Descent to Trainspotting since the recent news?
No.
Sorry, got to go with The Descent. But Descent's a great call. Jamie Cozier at Jamie_Cozier, The Italian Job.
Yeah.
Alfie and Chicken Run. Now that's a decent mix. I'm loving that. Ian Nesbitt at I_Nesbot. Kez. I can't take Kez seriously after Bo Selector. I can't.
Kez, you bastard.
Dead Man's Shoes and Darling, film I've never seen. Robbo McGlovin, The Italian Job, The Killing Fields, great film, and The 39 Steps. Mm-hmm. Now, that's one of those most iconic films you're supposed to see, and I'll admit I've never seen it, ever. Ellie Winchester, The Italian Job, Sliding Doors, and The Haunting.
Sliding Doors. You're gone.
You're only supposed to blow the bloody doors off.
Final one, Pizza Eaters at Eaters of Pizza, Clockwork Orange, Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels, brilliant film. And finally, 28 Days Later. That is a hell of a film.
Yeah, it's a great film.
Some good choices.
Keep them coming, guys.
We've been to our local View cinema to see Legend, not the 1980s cult classic fantasy film by Ridley Scott, the brand new film about the Cray twins, legendary London gangsters, starring Tom Hardy as both of the twins. So, Mark, Legend or Bell End?
Kind of Legend.
Hmm?
Yeah, a bit more than Bell End.
Tell me more.
I went in there expecting to be looking for faults of the two characters being played by the same guy.
Yeah.
And I didn't get distracted by that. And I'm quite relieved that it worked for me. Personally, I thought by about 10 minutes in, they were two separate characters.
Yeah.
I wasn't looking at, their eyes actually looking in. I thought I'd be really technical and ruin it for me. But it didn't, and I enjoyed it.
So on a purely technical level, you enjoyed it. Adam, what are your first instincts?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I kind of echo that. I enjoyed it to an extent. I think there's certain things that could have been done better. I thought it was a bit long.
Yes.
Generally, overall. Yeah. But I thought they went about certain aspects of the story in a very good way. As Mark's just said there about the two different characters, they introduced them in two very separate ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fantastic for establishing Tom Hardy as two different people within the film.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with Tom Hardy at any point. I thought he managed to make Ronnie and Reggie very, very different people. Ronnie was the more sort of suave, typical gangster, if you will.
Reggie.
I'm going to keep doing that. Reggie was the more typically suave gangster, whereas Ronnie was the more sort of unhinged,
thuggish,
psychopathic one. And not only were there differences in their psyche, there was difference in the physicality as well. Like he kind of had he looked like Brando from The Godfather when he was playing Ronnie.
Yeah, he was stockier.
He was stockier, and then he had sort of, it seemed like he had tissue in his bottom lip because it sort of puffed out his lower jaw, and the physicality was different, and they gave him glasses, which is always a surefire way to differentiate people. So I'd never had an issue with Hardy. I had an issue with everything else, though. I've not experienced a film in a while such as this where my enjoyment level gradually decreased. Start of the film, introduction of the characters, introduction of the, you know, swinging 60s of London, really enjoying it. And then as every minute ticked by, my enjoyment just got less and less and less.
I can tell, and I knew you were going to say this, for the fact that I was sat next to you and I saw you check your watch about 50 times after about an hour.
Yeah.
And you were glued to it. And I was thinking, he's hating this.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go as far as to say hating, but I was clock watching big time. Because what did it clock in at? 2 hours, 20 minutes?
Yeah. It's a long film.
It was too long. It was too long. And I did find myself clock watching a lot at the end, and I just gradually disliked it. Loved the performance of Hardy, as I've said. The problem for me was, it wasn't about the craze. I went into it thinking it was going to be about the rise and fall of these legendary London gangsters. It wasn't. You came into it, they were already at the top of the game. The film only covers the span of about 2 years, I think, two, 3 years. Yeah. And what it's really about is the relationship between the two brothers and also the relationship between Reggie and his wife, Frankie. And it's really about her. She narrates the damn thing. And that wasn't what I wanted to see. And I know you shouldn't judge a film based on what you wanted to see as opposed to what it is, but it just didn't deliver on what I expected. And I just found myself enjoying it less and less.
It was definitely advertised the way that the trailers have been put out as a kind of like a Guy Ritchie Lockstock feel British gangster movie. And I expected to see a lot of action, a lot of really gritty death scenes, and really I wanted to come out of the cinema scared.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, they're fucking mental, those guys, and you don't want to mess with them.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, it was a very big orientated love film, and we had a massive hour and a half romance after the initial really impact of the first 10 minutes. We were all loving the first 10 minutes. The soundtrack was great. We saw the two characters and I thought, this is going to be a really good, this is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right, it then turned into a love story, and then I kind of, when it ended, I was just like, I'm a bit frustrated, but I enjoyed Tom Hardy so much. I've come away thinking that was a good night and I enjoyed watching that film.
Yeah.
But I totally agree with what you're saying, and I can see how you kind of got a bit missold a little bit.
Yeah. The tone didn't work for me either, because again, I was going into it expecting it to be this gritty gangster film. And in parts it was, but then as you said, in other parts it was a love story. In other parts it was kind of a broad comedy. Basically anything that involved Ronnie.
Comic relief.
Yeah, and I don't know whether that was intentional or if that was just innate in the performance of Hardy. But the crowd were laughing. Basically anything that Ronnie said, the crowd in our cinema screening laughed. And I don't know how intentional that was. If it was intentional, then well done, you've got what you aimed for. But why would you aim to have a film that is so tonally mishmashed? I can't even say the word.
Mishmashed.
That's the one.
The biggest thing I take issue with was, for large parts of the film, there's slightly this eschewed rose-colour view of everything the craze did.
Yeah.
As if it was, they've kind of glorified it slightly.
Well, the film's called Legend, rather than Arseholes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These are gangsters that, you know, extorted small businesses, mm-hmm. took money off people who didn't really have a lot of it,
mm-hmm.
and murdered. Yet it's shown in quite a rose-colour view.
Yeah.
That was a good thing, and there's this camaraderie and loyalty about it, and it reminded me a bit of Green Street in that respect.
Yeah, it was a bit like Green Street, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That sort of very fake-looking East End of London without the real grit that existed there in the 60s and there now, I assume. Still a shithole, isn't it?
Yeah, well. I won't comment on that, I guess.
Allegedly.
It was just a bit of a, I think it's tonally, tonally off.
Yeah, it was inconsistent and just very odd, some of the decisions.
And Paul Bettany was in it as well.
He was, in another gangster film, yeah.
Which is a nice bit of continuity there.
It was, although he wasn't used at all well in this. I think, you know, he shows up for a cup of tea and he's gone.
As a cameo.
Yeah, basically.
It's quite a good theme, this one, because we had, like, best British films,
mm-hmm.
and this is probably one of the most British films I've seen in the cinema for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It's done well, yeah.
Yeah, I just wish I'd have loved it. I just wish I'd have liked it more.
Picking up on what you were just saying about Reg's character, who's quite comical, do you know what Ron. I was thinking? Ron, this is going to happen in the whole episode.
I'm not doing it.
You've got to keep track for this.
Okay.
Good on you. So Ron's character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was thinking every time I saw him, Harry Enfield and Chums. That kind of slightly Only me. A bit, just a bit over the top, ridiculous, yeah. kind of a bit too comical. Yeah. And think, like you said, it.
Yeah. I think the problem here is Tom Hardy has form with this. When it comes to putting on voices,
yeah, exactly.
He has form with these accents.
That comes later.
And it just was a bit silly. Like you said, the whole cinema were laughing at everything he said. Mm. That it shouldn't be like that.
Yeah.
Even the way when he's killing people was comical. We were laughing at the way he was stabbing someone in the throat.
And when he was beating a guy with hammers, we were chuckling.
Yeah.
I think there were certain aspects of comedy about it. I don't think necessarily that was the tone of the film, but I think maybe he was that sort of character.
Maybe so, but I don't think that necessarily worked within the context of the film. And the most jarring moment for me in terms of the tone was we'd had this levity with Ronnie. But then there's a bit later on in the film where Reggie kind of snaps and beats, and it appeared to me, rapes his own wife.
Yeah.
And that was like, you know, if you've presented this comical view, we've all been chuckling along, and then there's a rather nasty scene of a man beating and raping his own wife, I think you've got your tones fucked up there.
Yeah.
That didn't work for me at all.
Yeah, either these people are legends, or what they're doing is utterly wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
It was definitely dipping in and out of both, and it was... Even when they're at the mother's house, and they're these probably 35, 40-year-old men who are sitting there having a cup of tea and cake with the mum who's supposed to be oblivious to it all, and they're, oh, hide the gun, don't let mum see it.
Burn his clothes.
Yeah, it was a bit ridiculous. The mum walks in and's like... Whatever he's done, just make sure he's safe. And it's like, oh, for fuck's sake, you know he's just gone and killed someone. Yeah. Your son's the biggest name in the whole village. They know that you've got this gangster son.
Yeah. As if everyone can hear these things on the street and his mum wouldn't.
Yeah. Yeah,
exactly. What did we think to Emily Browning playing Frankie?
Fantastic. I do love her a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie.
She was great.
I thought she was great. And I think for an Australian, I thought her East End accent was flawless.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Has she been in much before?
She was in Sucker Punch. Yeah. That's what I know of.
I always try and forget anything about that, so that's why. But I thought she was a hell of a big part of this film. And to go up against Tom Hardy consistently.
Yeah, I mean, she was the narrator. She was our connection to the story.
Yeah, and that, I think, might be my biggest problem with it. And this is a big spoiler alert. Throughout the whole film, the film is narrated, as we say, by Frankie, Reggie's wife. We then find out midway or three quarters of the way through the film that she tops herself. She takes a load of pills and kills herself and then continues with the voiceover saying, oh, I bet you thought I was going to survive because I'm narrating this. Oh, well, there you go. And then she continues to narrate it from beyond the grave. And I was like, this is bullshit.
She's in heaven.
Oh, of course she's in heaven, yeah. Looking down on us all. Nonsense.
A lot of claptrap. Love. A lot of love in this film. There's a lot of little lines about how love can go on and never die forever. And I was thinking, this is winding better.
I don't remember hearing that.
Little things. There's a few little things about the power of love. And, he could change. And
what was that shit about the centre of the world is wherever you want it to be? Or
but he didn't change.
No, he didn't. He was a cray. He was never going to change.
Which is the suave, not so mental cray?
The what?
Reggie.
Oh, well, so I want
suave.
Yeah, suave. Suave. Another classic Mark.
There we go. We're getting them all in. Did you say Reg?
Ron.
Reg.
Ron.
No, Reg. No. Reggie.
Oh, the suave one is Reg.
Reg.
Ronnie wears glasses. Okay. Reggie doesn't.
Like the two Ronnies. Oh, no, they both wore glasses. Anyway. The cool one that's not as mental, right? Reg. Does anyone look as cool as that in a suit?
No.
He did look very cool.
He looked absolutely unbelievable.
Tom Hardy looks very good in a suit. And if he is going to be the next Bond, I think he could pull it off.
This might be his audition. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Jinx. But yeah. But no,
Mark is 12 years old.
He does look superb. And if it is his Bond audition, give it him now because he does look fucking cool.
He looked amazing. The music in the film, I thought the choice of songs was great. It was an authentic 60s soundtrack, but I thought the score was overbearing at times. I thought they bedded every scene with really loud, overbearing music.
There was this one tune that kept coming in and out, and it was like an off-key little keyboard thing to try and tie the scenes together. And they used it, I'd say, 8 times in this film, right? And it got to the point where you said it was just not needed in that scene. He'd be going down the street and he had just kicked off at his brother and left and he's quite in a rage. And then it just had to tie in like the next day with this little bit of music. And I was like, that music's A, annoyingly shit and off key and it was doing my head in. And B, it just doesn't work there. It was edited badly.
Yeah.
It's like the fucking Interstellar again with that organ.
Oh, God.
It was too much of this.
It was.
But again, the Northern Soul and the old 60s stuff was great. And it was great to see Duffy back on screen. Where the hell's she been?
Yeah.
She's been obviously working out, waiting for this film.
I thought some of the sets looked really fake as well. I mean, I don't know how much of it was genuinely shot on the streets of London or elsewhere, but there's a scene towards the end where you see Reg, and he's walking down an alley towards the camera, and it looked like the cheapest, tackiest set I've ever seen. It was clearly not a real street. It had been made with polystyrene and, you know,
paper mache
paint. Yeah, it was really weak looking. So I thought the film was beautifully composed. I thought the shots were good, but I think it looked cheap at times in terms of the sets.
Yeah, I can see that. I generally enjoyed it. I thought, well, I agree with what you were saying earlier about your enjoyment level kind of goes down as it goes on.
Yeah.
You could have chopped half an hour from that. I think it was an hour and a half. We'd have all come away going, that was pretty cool. It was dragging on and on. And like you're saying, not much really happened.
No.
They could have tightened it up massively.
I was quite impressed with, I know I touched on it at the very start, but I was impressed with how well they did the whole scenes with them both together. And I know they were never both really in shot, and they'd use someone else's shoulder in the foreground and stuff. Yeah. But it did work really well.
And
it looked good. Fair play.
Oh, I thought that was excellently done. There's a bit where they're both at a party, and Ron puts his hand on Reg's knee, and it's flawless.
Yeah.
You wouldn't know there was any camera trickery involved there.
And the whole fight between the two, it was great, because you saw it from the first person's perspective, and the way he's punching him, you're thinking, he's fighting himself. It's good.
Yeah.
Really cool.
So there were things to like. I just don't think it was a cohesive whole. It just didn't all hang together for me.
No, I could second that.
Yeah.
I did enjoy it, though. I think it's because we've seen a lot of crap recently, as in, like, B-movies and cheap shit.
I think to the cinema.
Exactly, yeah.
I think Tom Hardy's performance as Beau Dicrage kind of makes it enjoyable.
It does. It does, but it felt like it deserved a better film around it.
And maybe part of me wants him to be one of the twins and get someone else to be the other character, so he could have just concentrated on being one of them and perfected that instead of trying to, I don't know.
I think if this film wouldn't have been about the craze, if this film would have been about a fictional gangster and that was Tom Hardy's version of Reg, I think this could have been a great film.
Yeah.
I think as much as I enjoyed him as Ron, I thought it was great fun. I just don't think the two necessarily work together in the same film.
I'm intrigued where we're going to go with the scores on this.
Score it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You go first.
Yeah, well, as I said, my enjoyment levels gradually decreased. I think if I would have scored it after an hour, I'd have given it a 7. But by the end of it, it's a 5 for me. And I would say that if you want to watch a film about the craze, go and seek out the 1990 film called The Craze, starring the Kemp brothers as The Craze, which is an infinitely better film.
Monson, Martin Kemp.
Not Ross Kemp, no. Gary and Martin Kemp.
That'd be awesome. Adam, score it.
I'm going to give it a 7. I generally did enjoy it. I thought it was... it does not really feel cohesively correct in certain aspects, but Hardy's performance is great. There are some interesting moments. I think it tells the story of the Greys quite well in that respect, of those that time in their lives. Mm. But it doesn't really push past a 7 for me. 7 is being generous, but it gets a 7.
I'm going bang in the middle at 6. Mm-hmm. I kind of agree with both of you. There's bits I liked. There's bits I was really not enjoying. It was far too long. But for Tom Hardy's performance, which everyone's going to rave about, he won't get an Oscar for it, but
no.
A good, good, entertaining film. Yeah, 6. So I think that's 7, 6, 5. It's 6, isn't it?
6 overall, yeah.
Fair play. Legend. 6 out of 10.
It's that time again, boys.
Mm-hmm.
It's skip back in time.
Oh, yeah.
So, what's the year? Is it 2002?
Yep.
2002. So, is it a good year?
It's a pretty good year.
It's a pretty good year.
Yeah. Hit me with your choices, Mark. What have you gone for?
This one, I lost a lot of sleep over. I was lying there thinking, what am I going to choose? Insomnia.
Well, I see what he's done there.
Christopher Nolan, we've talked before about this film. I think it's one of Robin Williams's best performances, people will argue, but I do. Al Pacino, who I know you're a massive fan of. We all love this film. We all love the direction of Christopher Nolan up to Interstellar. And this is one of his... Was this the film he did in... I might be wrong, in between Batman?
In all fairness.
Or was it before?
I'd just like to put this out there. The direction in Interstellar wasn't the bad thing about
no,
it.
No, the script.
A really well shot film about the murder of a teenage girl, and basically it's a big cop chase, yeah. And I absolutely love it.
See, I take umbrage with you saying that we all love it, because I don't.
Do you not?
No.
Okay.
It was until I saw Interstellar. Yeah. It was the least of his films, in my opinion. I don't care for it.
Okay.
I think I saw it once and I've never watched it again because I just didn't enjoy it. You're right. Williams is very good in it.
Yeah.
I don't think Pacino is particularly good in it. I don't think it's particularly gripping or interesting. I didn't like it really.
Shame.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
are you a big fan of Al Pacino?
I'm something of a fan of Al Pacino.
Because he also said, I know you're a big fan of Al Pacino.
Well, yeah, that was another broad brush that he painted us with there, wasn't it? Just assumed that. I used to be, until Jack and Jill.
Yeah.
Oh, that was with Paul Blart Mall Cop's friend, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. Yeah. Happy Gilmore, I think his name.
Yeah.
Well, that's my choice, and I'm proud of it. And it's one of... I love that film. You should go back and watch it again.
Nah.
Don't bother.
You two have probably had the most disagreements about Skip Back in Time. Whenever Mark makes a choice, you seem to dislike it.
Yeah, but
I had 500 Days of Summer once, didn't I?
He always takes it personally. He forgets that it's a matter of
opinion.
I go
home and I cut my wrists.
There are plenty of films I like that I'm sure he doesn't, but he always gets really upset.
Well, he,
little tear
it,
in his eye.
Was it last time he had The Room as his favourite film of 2003?
Yeah.
And interestingly, on The Room, we actually have done a special.
Yep.
With interviews with Tommy and Greg Sestero.
Yeah. Go and check it out. You can find that on skiptotheend.co.uk or skiptotheend.podomatic.com or on iTunes.
Yeah.
Check it out. It's very good.
Plug, plug, plug.
It's a hell of an interview, I won't lie to you.
Really.
So, Mark's gone with Insomnia then.
Yeah.
Ben.
I've gone with a film that I actually know Mark does like, so I don't think there's going to be a disagreement here. The Rules of Attraction.
Incredible.
Absolutely brilliant film.
Love the book.
It was one of those films that I was always predestined to like. A, because it's based on a book by Bret Easton Ellis, who's one of my favourite authors, read everything he's ever done, love that book in particular. And B, because it was written and directed by Roger Avery, who was one of the co-writers of Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So it had pedigree going into it. The only thing that was kind of holding me back when I first saw it was the fact that the main character, this kind of sleazy, you know, uber masculine college student who all the ladies love was going to be played by Dawson himself, James Vanderbeek. And I was like, okay, this can't be good casting. I was wrong. Vanderbeek owns this film. He is absolutely brilliant in it. Some other great performances as well, like Ian Somerhalder from Lost. He's great in it as well. It's just a brilliant, brilliant film about these sort of disillusioned rich kids at this fictional college in the US and the shit that they get into. I love the fact as well that Vanderbeek's character in the sort of universe of Easton Ellis's books is Patrick Bateman's brother.
Yeah,
so Bateman,
yes,
from American Psycho, yeah. So it's just a great film, great performances, really well directed. It's a shame, actually, because Roger Avery has not done much since. I think he wrote Beowulf, which was shit.
Very shit.
And then I think he killed a kid or something. We might have to cut that.
No, leave that in.
No, we might have to cut it out. You'll have to check. I'm sure he was involved in a road accident and killed someone and then went to jail for it. So something happened anyway. So his career hit the skids.
From the sounds of what you've described there, it sounds a bit like a slightly worse version of Van Wilder Party Liaison.
Oh, it was a sequel. No, it's nothing like it. It is an absolutely fabulous film. Have you not seen it?
No, I haven't actually, no. Again, it's been on a list for a long time.
Yeah, seek it out. I remember the first time I saw it, actually. I think I was at university at the time. My friend Nick insisted we watched it at his house on DVD. And we were under the influence of magic mushrooms, which were perfectly legal at the time, I might add.
Yep.
So we did nothing wrong. And so this might be why I love it, actually, because we were out of our fucking trees
again,
on shrooms.
And you'd be like, this is awful.
I only just clicked that's why I enjoy it so much. But yeah, it was the same night that Buzz Lightyear toy started flying around my head, which may or may not have happened, I don't know.
Skip to the End would like to say that just because Ben enjoyed a film on magic mushrooms doesn't mean that magic mushrooms are enjoyable.
And they will not make every film enjoyable.
Tusk.
Imagine Interstellar on shrooms.
That's not.
That'd be some freaky deaky shit, wouldn't it?
I will say about Rules of Attraction, it's some of the best editing I've ever seen. When they do the shots of the guy going off on his travels, it's about a 3-minute sequence to try and sum up this guy's experience of being away for 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, that is a good scene.
It's so good.
Mm-hmm. Excellent film.
So good. I love the covers as well, all the little cuddly toys shagging. It's good. It got banned. One of those banned posters. Like Zach and Mary. So, Adam.
Yeah, I've gone with a film that I know you enjoy.
You
Catch Me If You Can.
Catch Me If You Can, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, this is the film that going to turn around Tom Hanks on you.
And DiCaprio.
And DiCaprio, mm-hmm. Yes. This is a fantastic film.
Yeah.
I looked through the list and there was a very tough call to make between this and Gangs of New York. Because I equally love Gangs of New York with, obviously, Daniel Lewis and DiCaprio.
Yeah.
But this just takes it because of, I guess, how easy it is to watch. Like, Gangs of New York, you have to be in the mood to watch. Whereas Catch Me If You Can, it's a really good film. A really good story.
Yeah. True story as well.
Yeah, true story. A lot of good fun in it. It's there are some fantastic moments in the chase between Tom Hanks and Leonardo DiCaprio. Basically, if you haven't seen it, the story of the film is that Leonardo DiCaprio plays a con man who goes by the name of Frank Abagnale Jr. He is well known for conning airlines out of a lot of money. He gets free flights everywhere because he poses as a pilot, and he prints his own checks.
Yeah.
A paycheck. So he eventually ends up in a lot of situations where he has to fraudulently become a doctor.
Doctor, that's the great best bit, yeah.
Yeah, he becomes a lawyer. He actually passes the bar exam, which is the most interesting thing, because there's a wonderful moment towards the end where Tom Hanks's character actually asks him, tell me how you passed the bar exam. And he goes, I studied.
Yeah.
I actually did pass the bar exam.
Yeah.
There was no trick, there was no cheat. I actually passed the bar exam. Mm-hmm. So it's all a very interesting chase, and there's some amazing moments where you think he's been caught, but he hasn't been caught. I have to recommend it to you. If you haven't seen it, go and watch it.
It's a great, fun, breezy film, and it's based on a book. I think it was a biography, actually, an autobiography, I should say, from Abagnale Jr. That's a good fun read as well.
Cool. We put this out to Twitter at STTE Podcast. Again, loads of new people, so thanks for taking part. Healtown, USA, Born Identity. That's good film. Sash Bash, which is at Bash 2110. Can't remember if I've answered this. Triple X. But then she put, only joking, ha ha. I think she knows your taste, Ben. And put, Catch Me If You Can.
Thank Christ.
Teresa Kinsley, Spider-Man. The original Spider-Man, Tobey Maguire.
Meh.
God.
Second one's better.
Yeah.
One that I know Ben's not a fan of. Steve Toogood is put, The Two Towers. Lord of the Rings.
Oh, right, no.
Absolutely dreadful.
What was that, 2002?
Yep. Sean G has put The Salton Sea. Never seen it.
Never heard of it.
That's not a joke. I've never seen it. 10K Awful. Movies. Talk to Her. Not seen that. This is quite good. The guy's actually called Spider-Man at Amazing Websling. You Know Mine. I take it he's applying.
Gangs of New York?
It could be. We never know. This is a good film. I'm sure you'll all love this. Grass has put City of God.
Yeah.
What a hell of a film.
Yeah, Brazilian film. Good stuff.
A few more to go. Janice Joplin, that'd be good. Janice Thomas has put...
Janice Joplin, bro.
There we go. Orange County. I've not seen it.
That's a great film, yeah. No. With Colin Hanks and Jack Black. Good film.
Never seen it. But did say, just wants to give a big shout out to Punch Drunk Love, which is the last good film with Adam Sandler.
It's one of, you know, yeah. you can count on one hand the amount of genuinely good films he's done, and that's one of them.
And finally, Lisa's A Pitch Podcast has put, was Attack of the Clones 2002? I replied and put, it certainly was. And they put, well, if that's the case, Minority Report. Minority Report, good film.
Mm.
So next time we're going to go to 2001.
Yep.
It really is flying. It really is. I can't believe when we started this feature, it's 2014, and now it's 2001.
Yep.
Amazing.
I'm loving it.
On the last episode, remember the competition we ran?
No.
It was, you don't remember it, man. We were giving away a Skip to the End limited edition Mac and Me designed t-shirt.
Oh, yeah,
sweet.
Right. Which is a one-off. We haven't even got any of these. It was a one-off.
Yeah.
Loads of other t-shirts of amazing films. Fast and Furious 7. There's the Robot Overlords. There's absolutely loads. Jurassic World. There's tons and tons and tons. Trainwreck. Literally, you've got loads of t-shirts to living in life. There's absolutely loads.
You will never have to buy a shirt ever again.
Never.
Loads of t-shirts to live in life.
That's I'm going to get to eternally bit that out.
Mark wisdom.
Yeah. Living in life. So we've put it out there, and all we said was, let us know, this is to the true fans, what was the first episode review.
Yeah, what film did we review on episode one? Yeah,
seems so long ago. Mm-hmm. And the answer is
Sharknado 2.
No. You could have said that.
Technically we did. Could have said that. We were looking for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Martin Hallsworth on Facebook, you'll be getting this. Fair play. We're going to check eBay if you try and sell this. Mm-hmm. You're going to get all those t-shirts. You might try and rip us off.
You won't get much for it.
We've now got a bigger competition. To start phase two, the beautiful, beautiful people at Universal have given us a Canon 1200D digital SLR camera.
I mean, that's a good price. You started off with Canon, and I was like, they're giving us a Canon?
Yeah. From Pirates of the Caribbean. Yeah. Now, this is worth loads of bunts. So I'm not going to lie. This is a hell of a prize. Now, basically, what we want you to do in, you know, there's a new movie coming out, The Visit. It's supposed to be Shyamalan's best film since Sixth Sense.
Definitely not how you pronounce his
name. How do you pronounce his name?
Shyamalan.
Shyamalan. You said Shyamalan.
Okay. Everyone is saying this is his return to form, which is, we know, let's go back to the last episode.
Yeah.
That was his last piece of work. We're talking about The Last Airbender.
Yeah.
Dreadful. That's true. So, which we gave a zero, didn't we? Or a one?
I think we might have given a collective zero.
Yeah.
It's pretty bad.
Shit.
So let's hope this film's better than that.
I'm sure it will. Well, it can't not be.
No. Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be better.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking is, I want people to get interactive with this and kind of tie in with the whole photo thing. So we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram. Take a photo yourself and make it bloody scary. And I mean really scary. Do whatever you want.
You know when they take a photo of themselves? Yeah. Is that what they call a selfie these days?
Oh, no, I don't want selfies.
Is that one of them their selfie things that they have now?
You could take a photo when it's dark at night of a dog walking past that looks quite harrowing. You know, whatever you think is a scary
Cujo.
Image. What I would do if I was entering this competition, I'd get sellotape on my nose and do it all up like sort of League of Gentlemen. Yeah, exactly. And I'd do face paint. And I'd put all my effort in to try and get this really good camera. Mm-hmm. Send it in on at STTE podcast. Send it on our Facebook /SkipTheEndPodcast or go on Instagram and tag us in at SkipTheEndPodcast. Us three are going to judge all these terrifying, really harrowing images and we're going to announce the winner on the next one and you're going to get this digital SLR camera.
Could I add a stipulation to this?
No naked pictures?
Well, that plus, if you use a selfie stick, you will immediately be banned.
Disqualification. Yeah.
Unless it's covered in blood and looks really scary.
Definitely not. No selfie sticks allowed.
This is an amazing prize, guys.
It's a hell of a prize.
Yes, it's a great prize. Not as good as a Canon.
No.
But
we're working on it.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to it.
We are like the MCU, aren't we? Now we've stepped up to phase two, bigger and better. Do you know what I mean?
About phase three. It's like, we've got a Ferrari.
And the winner is Mark Will.
Yeah. So we're looking forward to seeing these pictures. We're going to share the best ones online as well. And then on the episode, we're going to all sit around like the X Factor and we're going to get all the pictures laid out and we're going to pick our favourite.
Yeah. That's going to happen. Rewatch time, boys. First rewatch of phase two. So, you know, go big or go home, as they say, and we're going big. We're going big.
Sci-fi spectacular.
Oh, it's a masterpiece. It's Battlefield Earth.
Hang on, don't just start throwing masterpiece around willy-nilly, dude.
Yeah, come on.
Only when it's deserved.
That's true, it wasn't made in the 80s, is it?
That is Mark's words.
Yeah.
Sweet mother of Christ, Adam, talk to me. Battlefield Earth.
Twattlefield Earth.
Twattlefield Earth,
nice.
Indeed.
Battlefield Girth.
Okay. Why not? Jesus.
Now, the worst thing about it is for me, having sat down and watched the film, probably for the first time in its entirety at any one point.
Yeah.
Usually I've just seen bit parts of it here and there on TV.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot believe how badly they got this wrong.
But could they have got it right?
It's a simple story. Yeah. Humans are enslaved by aliens. Humans rise up to fight against aliens. Humans are enslaved by machines, a la Terminator. Humans rise up to fight against machines.
No, you're right, actually. It's a very simple story, and they fucked it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It literally... so much slow-mo.
You'll be pleased to know, guys, I don't like this film. Just want to get out there now, because I know what happens. Yeah. Mac and Me, yeah. Troll 2. I'm promising you now, just a bit of a spoiler, I didn't like it at all.
Thank Christ, because I want to pick up on what Adam said there. So much slow-mo. We're going to get onto it in a minute about the acting and the script, etc., etc., but I want to focus on the direction for a minute. Directed by a chap called Roger Christian, who apparently used to be an art director, and he actually worked on some of the early Star Wars films as an art director and then managed to get a job as an actual director. Christ knows how. But this film, there are so many directorial ticks that he just overuses to death. So slow-mo, so much slow-mo. Wipe, so side wipes, where it sort of wipes both sides of the screen, a la Star Wars, that every transition is a wipe.
The
I think they call it a barn door wipe or something like that.
Yeah, the sort of thing that's done on, if you remember, you know in Red Dragon?
Yeah.
Where Dolehide's working at that home video store. They used to have companies that did home videos for families. And they used to do, like, side wipes and stuff. It's like he's got one of those easy editing kits.
A cheap easy editing feature on Windows 95. That's what he looks like he's made this with. And the third thing, the one that got me the most, is the Dutch angles. Every single shot was at a technique called a Dutch angle, where it's just an angled shot, so everything is at a diagonal to the plane of view. Every single fucking shot. Great directors, people like Hitchcock, would use a Dutch angle every now and again in a film to show that things were slightly off kilter, and it puts you in the mindset of the character to know that they were feeling weird or off or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
He used a Dutch angle in every fucking shot for no apparent reason other than to make it wacky and weird. Oh, God. It's one of the worst directed films I have ever seen. It's cheap, tacky shit. It really angered me, the direction. Honestly, really
pissed
me off.
Just bring this up at the start when you're talking about this Roger guy.
Yeah.
He's actually won an Oscar for his work on Star Wars.
But yeah, so like in his book case at home,
he's also nominated for an Oscar for Alien. How do you go from that to this?
But was that as an art director as well? But that's a very different skill set.
I know, but he used to walk up to George Lucas on set and say, George, use a Dutch angle. No. Use a Dutch angle. No.
George, use another one of those wipes. I'm going to. Calm down.
But the fact is, he is an Oscar winner.
Yeah.
It's
Oscar wiener.
I think on the last episode, Ben, you said your iPad notes.
Yeah.
Mine on here is literally terrible acting.
Yep.
That's my first one in bold. I made sure of that.
It is worth 1,000 credits.
Ridiculous.
I'll come to that in a minute.
Shocking production design.
Yep.
Editing is the worst but funniest things I've ever had to see. The overuse of wipes between scenes is a bit like Star Wars, but there's no excuse for it, and it's poor editing.
Yeah.
The acting by Forest Whitaker and those stupid hairs.
Forest Whitaker. Forest Whitaker. He takes that wit. Pretty sure it's Whitaker. Carry on.
Forest Whitaker. It wouldn't be right if I got it right, would it? It's atrocious. And I think that Amy Winehouse probably inspired to have the same hair as that. And the line that I had to get there was, this is absolutely ridiculous, okay? I'm going to read it as he says it. He says, when you were still learning to spell your name, this is it, and tossing your hair in the air, I was being trained to conquer galaxies. Is that the worst delivered line you've ever seen in the history of film? I was literally saying, this is the same guy that's in Pulp Fiction. You have to stop and think about that.
Yeah,
it's probably the worst delivered line I'd seen within 3 minutes of that film.
Yeah, because it just kept topping itself. But going back to something you said there, Adam, that quote about the credits. What the fuck is this thing about bad sci-fi films where they can never think up a term for their money? They always use credits. The generic credits. Where does this come from? And I don't mind so much if it's set in some far-off flung corner of unexplored space, but this film's set on Earth. So why would they have given up dollars and, why would it become credits all of it? Why is it credits?
It's just like standard galactic currency in most sci-fi films, isn't it?
What prick made it up? And which pricks keep using it?
Well, Star Wars use Republic credits, don't they?
Yeah. Another thing that pissed me off in terms of the naming of things, the bad guys, played by Forest Whitaker... and and John Travolta, they
were
called.
That's why there was no wit in this film.
Maybe he took it all. They were called Cyclos. Yeah,
that's it.
Their home planet was called Cyclo. Why the fuck? If their planet is called Cyclo, would they be called Cyclo?
We're
from Earth. We're Earthlings. We are. You put more to it. It wouldn't just plural. You wouldn't just put an S on it. They would be called like Cyclovians or something. What piss poor writing? What lazy fucking writing is that? That the planet and the creatures and have got the same name? And I, you know, I've never read the book by L. Ron Hubbard. I'd rather be shot in the face. So I don't know whether this is actually directly from the book or not. But if it is, he's a fucking bigger moron than I thought he was.
Those aliens are stupid as well.
Yeah.
Really fucking stupid.
What about, mate?
But one thing I was researching about this film, Den of Geek said, the Cyclos are the most stupid thing ever in cinema history, even worse than the aliens of Mac and Me. I don't know how to take that, but, you know.
I think that's the thing. These Cyclos, from judging from this film's plot or lack thereof, are all in it for money themselves. They seem to have
for credits.
Some, yeah, they're not. They're not interested in the glory of their own empire or anything like that.
Yeah.
So there is no logical reason why they'd all work together the way they have to conquer these galaxies.
No. Well, because that's the whole thing about John Travolta's character, Terl, whatever his name is.
Terry. Oh, no.
Something like that. He overthrows his, or you know, he cheats on his bosses to steal this gold.
Yeah.
Don't get me fucking started on that gold. So they get Johnny Goodboy Tyler, the supposed main character of the piece, the young earthling who's trying to save his race. They get him and his buddies to mine for gold. They decide they can't be arsed mining for gold because Fort Knox is nearby, so they'll just go and steal the gold out of there. This film is set in like the year 3000. If this alien race of all about money had conquered us apparently 1,000 years prior, they'd have found Fort Knox by now. Why was Fort Knox still full of gold bars? And then when John Travolta's character came back and said, how's the mining going? And he presented him with gold bars rather than raw, you know, ore. Why did he go, oh, so you've had time to smelt this down then, have you? Yeah, I have. Yeah, we built a smelting furnace, didn't we? Because that's what we do. What the fuck? It's so stupid.
I miss these rages.
It's a ridiculous plot hole. It makes no fucking sense.
Well, I believe the reason they couldn't mine the gold is because there was radiation in the area around Fort Knox. Now, whoever did write this film clearly didn't understand that radiation is also detrimental to us. So, us as humans, wouldn't be able to go and mine the gold either.
Yeah. One of many plot holes.
I just want
to... Well, like the bit where he just automatically takes him to to Washington to read the Declaration of Independence or whatever it was. Oh, or Denver Library. I don't know. Yeah, fucking shit.
Some shit on it. They kept flying. One minute they were in Kentucky, then they were in Washington, then they were... Oh, I was like... Ugh. And they taught themselves... These are supposed to be... The earthlings that were left are supposed to be primitive creatures. They've regressed over these 1,000 years of enslavement. And then all of a sudden they learn how to fly sort of jet planes. Mm-hmm. What?
Well, he gets the magical beam thing into his eye that makes him understand everything.
Yeah, I can understand why that works for him. But the other guy, they put him in one of those like NASA training shuttles for 10 minutes.
Picked it up, mate.
And he picked it up, piece of piss, innit? I don't know why NASA even bothers.
No.
Why do they bother going through several years of training to send astronauts up?
Just get one bloke into the shuttle.
10 minutes.
He'll do it.
Job's a good one.
Whatever.
Shocking.
Drop the dome.
Shocking.
I want to mention the CGI as well.
Oh, fuck.
So there was one scene
there was CGI?
The scene where we actually see the spaceship first take off and it's completely like computerized and it looks like a bad game. I made a note of this. Do you remember the game Star Fox or Star Wings on the SNES?
Yeah, every time.
I think it was just a screen of that.
Yeah.
The worst CGI I've ever seen in my entire life.
Uh-huh.
The budget for this film was over 90 million.
Fucking hell. That all went to John Travolta.
Yeah.
The worst graphics in it for me, there was a bit where one of the miners, Terl, John Travolta's character, lifts him up by the neck and basically throws him into a canyon. And it was the worst green screen work I'd ever seen. The guy was quite clearly not hovering over a canyon. It was absolute shit. And that thing you're talking about there that's like Star Fox, it reminded me of Tron.
Yeah.
Like the
original
80s Tron.
But that was from 1980,
yeah.
Something, yeah.
Exactly, whereas this film's from 2000, isn't it?
And shocking.
You think how, you know, we all know that Phantom Menace is a fuck-awful film, right? But that came out in 99, and the graphics in that are pretty darn good.
Yeah.
So there's no excuse. You can't even look at it and go, oh, it's old. We didn't have the technology, or they didn't have the money. Mark's just told us the budget was 90 million. They had the money, they had the time, they had the ability, and they presented us with this absolute tripe. It's unfathomable.
And you chose it, dude.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? You're going off on one here. You chose it.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those films you do have to see.
No, you don't. You
shouldn't have to.
You do, just to understand that maybe The Phantom Menace isn't that bad.
Oh, God, yeah, it puts Phantom Menace in a whole different category. And it was clearly trying to be a sort of Star Wars-y type film, and it just didn't work.
I think I read that Travolta's plan for it was to turn it into a franchise. He wanted to honour L. Ron Hubbard.
Well, the book that this is based on is 1,000 pages long, and apparently this film covers the first 480 pages or something. Mm-hmm. So the plan was there to be a sequel. And I love the hubris of John Travolta assuming that there would be a sequel, that would be such fan demand for this absolute piece of shit that they want a sequel.
Do you know the plot of the book?
I do not. Why, do you know what happens in the second half?
I read up
on
it.
Do tell.
Essentially, after the Psy... whatever the Cylons are.
No, that's Battlestar Galactica.
Is it Battlestar Galactica? I don't know. Whatever they're called.
Cyclos.
After their planet's destroyed, what they don't realise is that Tala signed the planet over to the main character, Johnny.
Right.
The Earth planet. And alongside that, all the debt that comes from the Intergalactic Bank.
So the second film would have been about Johnny dealing with crushing debt.
It would have been trade negotiations.
Ooh, and we all know the kids bloody love trade
we need
negotiations.
More of that.
So that would have been a hit, I'm sure.
Christ on a bike.
No, it's basically about him then planning to get rid of the debt. And I, to be honest, I was falling asleep reading it. Not the book. Literally just the Wikipedia synopsis.
Yeah.
Shocking.
It's fucking...
How anyone thought this would make a good film is beyond me.
Did it totally bomb? Like really badly bomb?
I'm sorry.
Big time. Yeah, it died a death at the cinema, yeah.
Good.
If you're out there listening, Forrest, what are you doing?
I mean, the thing is, at least to his credit, he's come out and said it's the worst piece of shit I've ever done. Yeah. I don't know why I got involved.
This is a man who, you know, Last King of Scotland is still one of the best films I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And his performance as Idi Amin is unbelievably brilliant.
Yeah.
But then you see him in this.
I know.
And you just realise...
Dead to me.
Actors... What are they doing?
It's all about the bunts to them, isn't it?
They're not watching back, though, and look at themselves with these stupid hair. And
it's too late by then.
They just think, oh, what am I doing?
I imagine Forrest Whitaker hasn't watched that film more than once.
Which taker?
Nor should he. And I'm sure it's the biggest winner in Razzie history. It's won more Razzies every category that year. The only person who didn't win a Razzie was Forrest Whitaker because he was up against Barry Pepper for the same award. Yeah. So Barry won it and he couldn't win it. So he was the only loser. They won every award they were up for that. I think like 12 or something like that. Absolutely.
Unsurprising, though.
No, not surprising.
I think we just need to spare a moment's thought for the brave human that transported himself to the alien planet to blow it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Essentially, Johnny, the main character, decided that he didn't want to die.
Yeah.
So he sent some poor primitive sap to do it for him. So actually, he's a bad guy as well.
He's a prick. When did Independence Day come out? Was that the 90s?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that thing of that little div going up to the planet and sacrificing himself to blow it up is essentially what Will Smith and Jeff Goldblum were going to do. Yeah. They managed to escape and fly off, but that was their plan as well.
Yeah, it became the other guy, didn't it? What's it? I can't remember who played it.
1996.
And that had better graphics, that had better CGI.
Yeah.
And that film holds up. I like that film still.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
I was going to say, I had a Master System of Alex the Kid when I was about five. That had better graphics than this shite.
It's really bad.
It is days like today that sometimes I wish we filmed this podcast because Ben's face is like the most angry. You look genuinely pumped up and that you want to kill somebody.
I haven't got this pissed off about a film in a good long while.
I think it was Matrix Revolutions where you...
It was even before that. I can't remember what it was.
Did everyone enjoy the moment where Terry or whatever his name was, I can't remember, turned around and said, ha-ha, I said I wouldn't kill her.
Yeah.
Dreadful.
Don't know, I might have zoned out by that bit.
I'll be honest with you, I watched the first half of this and fell asleep.
Shame.
Nothing happens.
No, nothing happens. Nothing of interest happens.
And then I had to start watching it again.
2 hours, 12 minutes. It's testing us, lads. It's not ridiculous. It's not good. I want short, snappy, short
films. If we're picking a bad film, let's make it short. Come on, boys.
Yeah.
And on that note, let's score it and let's get Mark's next rewatch.
Yeah. And let's ask the people what they thought, remember? People actually jumped on board with this.
Oh, of course they did.
More than Troll 2.
Can we hear what they think before we score it? I'm sort of intrigued to see what the view in the world is. Maybe we're wrong. Maybe we're the idiots.
Chris Kens, which is at Comedy Kens, Never Again, possibly the worst film ever made.
Okay, there's one on our side.
Mm-hmm.
Garrett McGuinness, overacting plus Dutch angels plus
angles,
Scientology.
Mark. Dutch angles.
At Dutch angles.
Don't know what a Dutch angel is, pal.
They're only ones that they're smoking weed, drinking tanks of beer, and they fly down from the sky in Holland. Scientology plus once good actors plus summer blockbuster equals not being worth a fucking air biscuit.
Right.
That's two.
Yeah.
Awesome. Chris M, which is at Movies Are Win. You simply can't comprehend this film. Battlefield Earth, man-animal, not in 1,000 cycles. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Three, I think.
Justin Strawn.
Yeah.
Rewatch Battlefield Earth. Why the fuck do you hate us?
Okay, I think that's four.
Yeah.
Zoe Hammond. I don't fucking think so.
I think that's five.
Yeah. Yeah. Christopher at The Irish Online. That feels like the longest sci-fi channel TV film ever seen. Just as low budget as well.
That's six.
Yeah.
Medium-sized John. Watching this again would be like smashing my testicles with a toilet seat.
I think that's... I don't know, is that one for the...
I want to get to 10 line. Now. This is pretty good.
Depends if you're into that one, I don't know.
Some countries you pay extra.
Yeah.
Guardian 452. Definitely the room of sci-fi films. Awful plot, piss-poor cinematography, and shit acting, which I've seen better in the Power Rangers.
How dare you? How dare you compare this to The Room?
How bloody dare you?
I
think that's actually... But that's one for the other side, surely.
Yeah.
So that's... 7-1.
And this is what I love. So John Brooks went out and bought this from CEX for 30p.
Other shots okay.
Ripped off. Yeah. Ripped off.
He said, I settled down to free up 2 hours to watch this for you guys. Fell asleep, but I ended up watching it all, and it's rare for me to fall asleep. And here's my three-word review. Are you ready, boys?
Yep.
I fell asleep. That's it.
I think
that's eight. I don't think he finished it, actually. He said, at least Troll 2 was fun. I think we are putting people through a lot of pain.
Well, it's your chance to rectify it, mate.
Yeah. Right, let's score this.
So that's 8-1.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. It's
and the ones
not good. God, this could be another. What was the lowest we've ever done? Was the Wicker Man remake, and that was the first ever zero for was Phase that, One.
What did Airbender get then?
I think that got a one. I think it was all right. Oh, we've been low. Right, I'm going to score it first.
Go on, then.
One.
Okay.
Just for the haircuts.
Right.
And Amy Winehouse must have influenced the hair from it, because she must have. Plus, yeah, I like to listen to them communicating them. That noise they're doing. That was pretty good.
That sounds like you trying to pronounce a complicated name.
Go fuck yourself. Adam.
Nope.
Are you doing zero?
I refuse to rate it.
You can't abstain,
it has
rate.
To have something.
I don't want to rate it. I don't want to give it a number.
You're going to have to.
Giving it a zero, then.
It's going to have to be a zero.
Adam's giving zero every week.
Look at the film.
To be fair.
Look at the film.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Mm.
Just die. Zero.
It is, without doubt, and I say without hyperbole, the worst fucking film I have ever seen. It has taken the title from XXX, which was previously the worst fucking film I'd ever seen. It is the new title holder. It's the new standard bearer. It's the worst piece of shit. It's the worst acted, worst directed, worst written piece of fucking garbage I have ever seen. And if I could give minus numbers, I would. But I can't. So it's zero. Fuck you, Battlefield Earth.
Ben's a fan.
I think it might get the Lifetime Skippy Award this year.
I think it might, you know.
Yeah.
So are we going with zero?
Yup. Mm-hmm.
Wow. John, some good news, lads. It's my turn to pick the rewatch.
Here we go.
And I appreciate that we've done a lot of dog shit films recently. And I'm talking
weird.
No. we've been unfair. We've talked about really bad films. We're getting to the point where, let's put it, Ben's getting out this angry. I don't want to put him through this again. I genuinely don't. So as you heard earlier in this episode, we talked about Legend, about a guy that can take on the role of two separate people. Let's go for another example of this, okay? We're going to go and watch a comedy, Jack and Jill.
Fuck
Adam
off.
Sandler taking on two roles, as Tom Hardy did. A comedy, no more horror, no more cheap budget, a masterpiece.
No, see you later. Yeah, okay. I just turn this microphone off.
This is it.
We're doing it. Fucking jog on.
Next week, Jack and Jill. It's Phase 2, which means we've got a brand new game. After the success of the rating game, it's Fan Movie Fortunes time. It's going
to
be good. It's going to be fun. Anyone that didn't listen, surprise you didn't, but if you didn't, just a quick summary of how this game's going to work. It's based on a famous ITV show with Les Dennis, absolute legend. called Family Fortunes. But this is going to be tailored to Skip the End podcast, and it's a homage to it. That's fair enough.
Yeah, not a ripoff.
On the episode today, I will be the games master, and it will be Ben taking on Adam on the first ever Family Fortunes. Yeah. You're going to take it in turns to have a guess, and the topic for this episode is going to be the top 10 funniest comedies ever made by the readers of Empire magazine. So that's kind of like I think they always say what do they say on actually Family Fortunes? They say the survey said.
Yep.
That's what they say. So we'll still refer to the survey, but the survey is going to be the Empire readers.
Yeah.
So the topic is top 10 funniest comedies ever.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to go first?
I believe Adam should go first because he was the overall winner of the rating game, so it's only fair.
Fair play, by the way, on that as well. And I was the loser and got the wooden spoon.
Mm-hmm.
Dreadful. So, Adam, top 10 funniest comedies ever. Give me a name.
Life of Brian.
Life of Brian. Do you think that's up there?
I do.
Ready? It is at number 4.
Good work.
Fantastic work.
Good work. So how do we win this? We're going to take it in turns, and whoever gets the most right?
That's exactly it.
Cool.
And right. If it gets to the point where you haven't got them all,
yep.
I might give you some very hard hints to try and push you in the way.
Right, okay.
Okay, so
push
we've got
in the way of what?
Life of a car, a moving car outside. So no, Life of Brian at number 4.
Yeah.
Brilliant start there, Adam, but there's going to be 3 above that. Adam, nope. Ben. Even in front of me. Ben. Topic.
Spinal Tap.
Spinal Tap.
You're fucking joking.
No.
Spinal Tap is not in the top 10.
No.
Empire readers, what are you thinking?
The survey, you mean.
The survey. Spinal Tap.
Yeah, it's that specific.
No, the survey is shite. They're not on board. So, Adam,
I'm furious.
You could get here 2-0 ahead.
Anchorman, The Legend of Ron Burgundy.
He's got it. It's at number 2.
Shit the bed.
I thought you were going to say that as well.
Well, I would have eventually.
Right. Please, Ben, get this.
Good God.
I know.
Well, I'm utterly confused now because I don't trust the survey.
Pick some of the... Yeah, I know. It's tough.
Oh, good God. Annie Hall.
Go home, mate.
It's not going well, is it?
No.
Is that like the only other comedy film you know?
Yeah.
Adam, to go 3-0 up.
I thought, what could be higher than Anchorman? Napoleon Dynamite.
I love him doing these noises. Ben, back to you.
I'm going to stick with the Monty Python thing then. Let's say Holy Grail.
He's got it.
Yay!
That's at number 5.
Bonus.
Just below Life of Brian.
Yeah.
There's actually a board here that we're playing with, so we'll get it on Instagram in a few weeks after the episode's gone out, because it's pretty good. It really does feel like I'm actually on the game show.
Mark has literally spent a bit of arts and crafts time putting together a board, folks. You do
it's
need to see it.
It's absolutely awesome. Adam. Come on, dude. I don't want to start getting the hints out already.
No. What? Groundhog Day.
Really?
That should be up there.
Jesus.
Ben.
Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead?
Yeah.
Right in at number 10.
Get the fuck in!
I mean, I love it, but...
Boo!
Is that 2-2?
2-2. Great work. Straight back in it. You wouldn't think so. Mm-hmm. I thought you were gone and buried. That famous saying. Right then. So just to recap, you've got Anchorman, Life of Brian, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and Shaun the Dead. 6 to go. Come on, think of comedies.
The Naked Gun.
He's gone and got it. Number 7.
Good shot.
Ben, back to you. Come on, mate. I want this 3-all.
I'm going to have a punt on our mate Sandler. Happy Gilmore. Fuck.
Good. I'm quite happy about
that. I can't wait for the rewatch. Anyway, back to you.
The Jerk.
Shit.
Jerk off, mate. back to you.
Oh, God.
Do you want the clues already?
How many have we got right so far?
At the moment, you've got halfway there. You've got 5.
5 out of 10.
One more and then we'll start getting the clues.
Yeah, and my clues will be good.
Might really have to. Hot Fuzz. Christ.
So last go before the clues come out.
A Shot in the Dark.
Oh, I thought you were about to say, it is A Shot in the Dark.
I'm going for a shot in the dark.
Right, my go. Give me a clue.
Okay, so... We've done a special around Christmas time on the sequel.
Dumb and Dumber.
He's got it.
Woo! That's the most obvious clue I've ever heard.
I'm sure he was saying they're going to be really hard.
Right. For
that's
you,
not a clue. That's giving him the
okay,
answer.
Okay, I'm going to be fair and give you some clues that are quite
okay,
obvious.
Okay, give me the clue for the next one.
Okay. Ali G played this character as somebody else, the same guy.
Borat.
There we go.
So Adam's 4-3 up, yeah?
Yep. Ben, a clue. I'm going to... not so easy this time. If you drink a lot, you might wake up the next day with a...
I don't...
Oh, God, I feel so bad.
Really? You don't know this one?
Oh, the, oh I see. Really? It's obviously The Hangover, but I was thinking Full Bladder. I don't... I'm not seen Full Bladder.
Oh, yeah, that famous comedy, Full Bladder.
So is this for all?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's Adam.
I'm going to... I have to be a bit harder on this one. Get me a White Russian. I'm thirsty.
Oh, that's so easy, you bastard.
Oh, Big Lebowski.
Too easy.
Right, this is it.
To tie it all up.
Yeah. Uh-huh. If you don't get this, you've lost the very first round.
Yeah.
It's got the most amount of jokes, I think, ever in the history of film. Single amount of jokes and gags all the way through it.
Is that the answer?
Shit.
10.
No. 9. No.
Ever in the history of film, it's got the most amount of gags over an hour and a half. I think there's a gag like every 11 seconds or something stupid like that.
I don't know.
I'm going to hand it over to Adam. If he gets this right,
yeah. He's
the Fan Movie Fortunes Episode 1 winner.
Well, he's already won because I've got it wrong.
Double. It's just stretching. It's just completely like kicking you while you're down.
In the wound.
Airplane.
Brilliant.
Good, yeah. Shit.
Don't worry. Next week you can play me. Adam can be the games master.
Yeah.
And you'll probably beat me.
We'll see.
Tune in next time for Fan Movie Fortunes. Listener questions time.
Whoop whoop.
See, I'm still not saying question and answers now. Listener questions. You like that, don't you?
Yeah, it's the name.
We've had absolutely loads. We're going to get these through as quick as we can for you guys. Tattoo guy at tattoo but three O's guy on Twitter. If you had to get a tattoo of a movie theme on you, what would you get? So movie theme tattoo.
Okay.
I'll go first.
Go on.
I want the cover of The Thing, you know, that figure with the hood
down
my arm. I think that would look pretty badass, as long as it was done well, not by some spud. But, not like a work experience kid who tries to draw it. I think that would look really cool on my arm. Or I'd have the jaws on my leg. That would be cool.
Do they do work experience in tattoos?
Well, yeah, come on in, mate.
I once got a tattoo in a city I shan't mention, in a tattoo parlour that used to be a kebab shop. And I'm pretty sure they didn't change staff when it changed what they did. Because when I first had it done, it was so piss poorly done that I had to go back and make them go over it again. And they tried to charge me, and I told them to get bent, that they should do it for free. And they did.
At the end, they're like, do you want sauce with that, mate? You're like, oh, fuck this, fuck this, for fuck's sake.
Actually, just sauce. Not a tattoo ink.
Anything you'd like?
No wonder it only lasted a day.
Anything you'd like?
Yeah, I love the logo of Tyrell Corp, which is the company from Blade Runner.
Nice.
And it's their logo, and it kind of looks like an owl's eyes. And not only would I have the Tyrell Corp logo, I'd have their slogan, which is more human than human.
No, there you go, nice.
I don't know, like, I've always been more of a gamer.
You're a huge gamer.
So I think if I was going to get a tattoo,
Zelda,
it'd be something from a game, perhaps, maybe like a... Yeah, like a Zelda Triforce.
I've seen loads of people with a Triforce tattoo.
You should get Halo tattooed on your dick with a big helmet.
who's Halo? Do you mean Master Chief, the main character from Halo?
Oh, so sorry, yes. Next question, I hope that gives you that.
You should get Halo.
At Lion Tiger Eagle, but again with three E's, your favourite thing about doing Skip to the End?
Time with friends.
Yeah, it's the doing it. You know, we get to prep things and come up with answers and come up with ideas, and it's always fun doing that. But the real fun of it is sitting here and just talking shit.
Also, the fact that we get to, and we say this a lot, but it is genuinely 100% true. Topics, rewatches, things like that, we don't tell each other about.
No.
We literally come here when it's our turn to pick, we tell them there and then. You get the live recording.
Yeah.
And the responses are actually quite natural.
Indeed.
I love the feedback we get on Twitter from people. The fact that someone will go out there and buy a DVD that week to help join in, I just think this is insane. Why do you bother? But I love you for it.
Yeah, I think we've massively contributed to the cult of the room.
Yes, massively.
We've grown that burgeoning cult.
Weirdly, at Fancy Fez, Will there be any more sequels in Phase 2 of Skip to the End?
Wait and see.
Yeah.
Keep tuning in.
We don't, to be honest, we don't really plan these sequels. We just, when inspiration takes, inspiration takes.
Well, you know, Travolta said there was going to be a Battlefield Earth 2, so...
Never know.
Stay tuned. As well, forgot to say this, the website is still up and running. The original website from back in the day for Battlefield Earth.
Christ. I know. Thinking of how bad the CGI in the film is.
You go on that, it's like going on AskJeeves.com.
Is it like Battlefield Earth /GeoCities.com?
.org.
Angel Fire.
At Abdom Everett, how the hell did you get Tommy Wiseau to do an interview? I don't think we should say.
No, I want to tell him.
No,
it's because hard work.
I want to tell him. It's because Mark's a persistent son of a bitch.
Yeah.
He worked hard and he got him.
I wanted to say we're not telling because they'll all go out and be persistent bitches and he'll get 100 million emails.
Yeah, but Mark, come on. No one's going to be as a persistent a bitch as you.
True.
At Movie Madness 5, which dead celebrity do you wish you could have interviewed for Skip to the End?
Do you know, I was thinking about this the other day, actually, who I would love to have met. I'm a huge, huge fan of Hunter S. Thompson, the Gonzo journalist and writer. I've read everything he's ever done, my bookshelf.
Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that film was based on some of his work. Yeah. And so, obviously, Johnny Depp played him in that film. There was also a film many years before that called Where the Buffalo Roam, where Bill Murray played him. So he's, you know, he is connected to cinema, and I love him as a writer, and I'd love to see how close those portrayals were of him. And I'd just love to talk to the guy, but dead now, shot himself. Shame.
See, I mean, it's a difficult one. I think the answer to this would probably change every month.
What, when more people die?
Well, and of course, depending on kind of what you've seen or what's kind of piqued your interest, you're going to want to interview different people.
Yeah.
I think someone like Douglas Adams, who wrote Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I'd love to speak to. He's well known for having a great sense of humour on the page and off it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the best interviews are generally with the funniest people.
Big time.
I would go with Roy Scheider, who played Brody in Jaws.
Yeah.
I just wish I could sit down and ask him about what it was like to... He died, I think, quite young, and I just would love to sit and talk about the experience of being Brody in Jaws. At Podcaster Nerds Central, loved your last episode and hearing all about your highlights, but what was your personal favourite episode of Phase 1 of Skip to the End?
Christmas one.
I was going to say the Dumb and Dumber when we all had quite a lot to drink. Or quite a lot to drink.
That was great. We'd had a few shandies that day. We'd seen a Christ awful film. We had a laugh. I'm inclined to say that as well. But the other one that I think is on a par with me is the episode where we reviewed Terminator Genesis, which is when Gemma was on.
Yeah.
Not only was it great fun having Gemma here, and we're going to have her back soon, it was also the day where we debuted the script for The Room 2.
Yeah.
And that was just great fun doing that. So I think that was the most fun I've had recording.
At Lawson_Akira, which do you prefer, The Departed or Internal Affairs? I've got a feeling not all of us have seen Internal Affairs.
Yeah, do you know what? Something I was supposed to correct Adam weeks ago and I never did. I'm sure it's called Infernal Affairs, not Internal Affairs.
Oh.
I've done a mark, haven't I?
Yeah, it's not as bad as, you know, Janis Joplin, Forrest Whittaker. I think it's Infernal Affairs, but I have seen both and I prefer the Scorsese one, to be honest.
I have no preference on either, really. They're both good films in their own right.
Yeah, they're two excellent films, and I think the reason why I prefer the Scorsese one is because I know the actors.
I'm to agree. DiCaprio, Nicholson,
Alec Baldwin, you know, all these guys who I love. So I'd rather watch them than sort of faceless, nameless actors that I don't know from Asia.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
The Departed. It's the most recent. When I was at uni, but I was absolutely wasted. Absolutely battered. Carl Highland has put, as reviewers, classes us as reviewers, I love
that.
Baby,
that's what we are.
Do you believe you should go into a brand new movie blind, or do you think you should do a bit of research before you watch it?
Well, I go in blind.
If you ask Stevie Wonder, you will.
I go in, I try and learn as little about it as possible beforehand, and then when my interest is piqued after seeing a film, I then try and understand it a bit more afterwards.
See, I have a bit of cognitive dissonance about this because on one hand, I love to know nothing. I love the idea of knowing nothing about a film and having that pure, fresh surprise of it. But on the other hand, I bloody love spoilers. So even though I know I don't want to do it, I can't avoid digging in and finding it. I know it's stupid, but I love to find out as much as I possibly can, which I know ruins my enjoyment at the end of it, but yeah.
I'm the most impatient little bastard you'll ever meet. So I've read about it. I've read the ending. I can't avoid it. I will know everything about Star Wars from the French leak the day before it comes out. I can't.
Yeah.
I'm terrible.
I'm the same.
I go online. I read about last episodes of TV. I just have to.
It seems like when we go to gigs, we'll go on the set list website and find out what set list they're going to play. We can't help it.
I know.
Yeah.
I had to read the other day at the ending of Hannibal. I had to go online because it was on in America. Yeah. I read what happens and I was like, oh, that sounds good. And then I just watched it basically to see how it was.
My friend Sookie is even more impatient than any of us. She, I don't know if she still does this, but she used to, if she would buy a book, she would read the last
chapter.
She would read the last chapter first to decide if it was a big enough ending for her to then bother reading
that's
the rest
shocking.
Of the book. Which is mental. Even I wouldn't do that. That is mental.
Not actually. Oh, no, it is mental.
It is mental, yeah.
At DannyMC66, talking about it recently, is it okay for Marvel to do reboots after Avengers Infinity War? It'll be a long way off, I think, until we start getting like a brand new Iron Man again. And
people have to remember that Marvel have a hell of a lot of material to go with. Yeah. I mean, we're more likely to see Secret Wars on screen as a reboot before. And you know, if it's taken them, what, 7, 8, 9, I think by the end of Infinity War Part 2, it'd be 11 years since Iron Man 1.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's taken them 11 years to finish off Infinity War, it's going to take another 10 before they get to the end of Secret.
Yeah. And I can't, you know, it depends how you interpret a reboot. A reboot to me is you have the Tobey Maguire Spider-Man films and then you have the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man films playing the exact same character, the Peter Parker Spider-Man. That's a reboot. I can't see the MCU ever going back to scratch. What they might do is, you know, Robert Downey Jr. says, I don't want to be Iron Man anymore. So someone else in that universe takes over the mantle of Iron Man. So it's not a reboot, it's just an evolution.
Yeah, I mean, these characters have been going for, some of them 80 years. I think Cap's been going for absolutely ages.
Yeah.
And the amount of incarnations of different characters. I mean, currently in the Marvel comic universe, we've had a female Thor.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's very much a possibility once Chris Hemsworth decides.
This is it. You know, Natalie Portman could become the female Thor.
Yeah.
Robert Downey Jr. bows out and Don Cheadle becomes Iron Man. Bucky Barnes, he becomes Cap. You know, these things happen in the books and could happen in the films. I can't see them rebooting and going back to scratch at any point because they've built too big a universe to do that.
And until they're done with the universe, until they think this is the end, it's Secret Wars, we're going for the reboot.
Or until it simply stops making enough money, at which point they go, shit, we need to rethink this. But I can't see that happening anytime soon.
If it gets to the point where it's really exhausted, Tommy Wiseau as Loki, we said it before.
Yeah. It'd be amazing.
That's all we need.
And he's already said he wants to direct Fantastic Four too. So
can't do a worse job.
Big time.
Guardian 452 at Rob Horrocks 432. Ah, I recognise this because he's been asking quite a lot about this. Regarding the Barry Chuckle Rambo remake.
Yep.
I love that he's actually infatuated with this.
Hey, no, it's a good idea.
Do you think Mr. Motivator would be able to get a role in it?
There's always a role for Mr. Motivator, as long as he's still wearing the tight spandex.
Yeah, if he approaches us and says, I'm interested, he's in.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, Rob.
If he can choose the role.
I was going to say, Rob, we'll get him in for you. You've stuck with us for this. You seem to be infatuated with this remake. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm seeing him as Barry's like sort of sidekick.
Yeah, I've also, I probably shouldn't reveal this on air, I should have probably had a little word with you off air, but I've also got Bobby Davro lined up for a pretty sizable role, so
looks. Stay tuned. You heard it first here. Wow.
Excellent stuff, I can't wait for that. Have we reached out to Cheggers?
Cheggers is busy, mate.
At Things I Found, I was at the cinema 2 weeks ago, and two people walked out of Southpaw after only 5 minutes. What's the quickest you've ever seen anyone leave a cinema? I can answer this one first.
Go on.
When I went to see Toy Story 3, I remember one of the I remember a mother was there with her two kids, and I'm not joking. You heard this and the kid shit himself as the opening credits were there, and it stunk. You know, a cinema is not the best place to keep a smell.
Not the most well-ventilated.
And it absolutely stunk of baby shit, which is the worst shit of all shits that you could smell.
It's like
and
green.
It stunk. Ugh. And she sat there for about a minute, and I'm not joking. She was like, we need to go. Come on, Julian. Hold his hand. Pulling him out. And it's just shit. Absolutely stunk. So that's the quickest I've ever... It wasn't his choice, but she shouldn't... pretty bad.
Do you know what? He's got no fortitude, because we've told the story before about my cousin shitting himself when he went to see Willow, and he sat there in his turds for an hour and a half fantasy movie starring Warwick Davis and Val Kilmer. So, you know,
Warwick Davis,
that needs to be a rewatch.
That's fortitude right
Warwick
there.
Warwick Davis' acting is so good.
Yeah.
You will sit in your own
turds. He was stuck to his seat.
Oh my God.
I've not really seen anyone walk out of a cinema, or I've not noticed anyone walk out of a cinema. I've seen people chucked out after about seven, 8 minutes into a film.
Just for being twats.
For doing things that, let's say, were not suitable for under a 12A.
At it.
Yeah. Turns out when that red light's on recording and they can see you, they can see you do a lot of other things instead.
So degrading.
I don't know that I've ever seen anyone walk out of a film.
No?
No.
Have you ever walked out of a film?
No, I mean, as I said, I've told you before, I sat through Triple X, the whole goddamn thing.
Wow.
Yeah, because I have fortitude.
I've never walked out of a film.
No.
Couple of last questions from Facebook, guys. So, Danielson Betts has put, what biopic would you like to see made?
Mm.
That's tough.
Well, yeah, I was thinking about this one, actually.
Were you?
Yeah.
What, just casually?
No, I'll tell you why, because I read something about a biopic the other day that's been percolating for years. You know Chris Benoit, the wrestler? Yeah. For those of you who aren't wrestling fans, Chris Benoit was a tremendous, tremendous wrestler, one of the best in the business, and then basically due to roid rage, he killed his wife and kids.
Literally shot them.
Not a storyline. Not a storyline. Actually happened.
Yeah.
Was it attributed to steroids in the end?
May have been. I don't know that there's ever been anything conclusive on that. But
it's an interesting statement to throw out.
Well, I'm not conclusively saying it was, but that is that's what people believe.
Something
may,
led to
may
believe.
Have been. Yeah.
They
so
did
anyway,
a study on his brain, didn't they? And apparently they found out he had like the brain of a 70-year-old
Alzheimer's patient. Yeah, and that wasn't anything to do with drugs. That's getting hit on the head by a steel chair every day as your job, you know. So I loved Benoit as a grappler. I thought it was unbelievable. And a lot of books have been written about him. One book has been optioned for a movie several years ago. And there's a lot of talk that Liev Schreiber is going to play Chris Benoit.
Wow.
I think that's perfect casting. Yeah. He's got that same sort of kind of stocky build and square face. I think that would be great. And it's sort of been up and down in developmental hell. But about a week ago, I read that it looks like things are moving on that again. So I would love to see that. You know, The Wrestler is a film we all love. It's a great film, mm-hmm. but it's a fictional story. A true story about a guy who really lived that life and it ended in tragedy, I think, could be great stuff.
I think it would be very, very weird seeing... Because obviously this guy was, he was around when I was probably at the peak of my wrestling fandom.
Yeah.
So I was seeing him week in, week out. It'd be very odd seeing someone else as him.
Yeah. And the thing is, he has one of the most recognisable walks. Anyone who knows Chris Benoit, in their mind's eye, can see how he walks. So just to see someone like Liev Schreiber try and copy that.
That'd be weird.
Yeah.
I mean, with regards to biopics, I think most people that are important have been done.
Fuck you, Robin Williams.
Other people's lives don't really interest me, if I'm completely honest with you.
I'm going to go with Michael J. Fox. I'd like to see him, I'd like to see more about his childhood, and I'm interested in his lead up to doing Back to the Future. Yeah, but it'd be an interesting story. It'd be quite sad. Maybe wait until he's passed away and then do it.
Yeah, I was thinking it's a bit early, isn't it? Yeah. He's going strong.
The Benoit thing has interested me a lot, actually, now you've said that it's been optioned for a book.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that could be quite good.
Yeah.
Eddie Vedder as well from Pearl Jam. I'd love to hear about how he got into music. And I'd love to see something about Tommy Wiseau, but we'll get that, won't we, with the Disaster Artist.
Oh, his version of it.
Yeah.
But I'd be more interested to see where Tommy came from. And
he won't tell us.
How he got his
We'll ask him over dinner when we go in February.
Yeah.
We're going for dinner with Tommy Wiseau.
Earlier that we've done a room special featuring interviews with Tommy Wiseau, writer, director and star of The Room, and Greg Sestero, one of the other stars of The Room. As we said, it's on skiptothem.co.uk or skiptothem.podomatic.com. And you'll hear on there, Tommy quite clearly invites us for dinner. And we're taking him up on it.
No, he genuinely means it.
Yeah, yeah. Verbal contract.
And he did say to me at the end, I love you too.
Yeah.
Well, that's because you said, I love you, Tommy. Yeah, you just mentioned that. Yeah. And he agreed. So
we love each other.
Yeah, it's fine.
So Mark's got a place to stay that weekend as well.
Yeah.
Final question. I think you might want to bring this one back. Jack Lee. Two directors were to team up and write and direct a movie, who would you choose?
Joel and Ethan Coen.
That would never work. I want to bring that back. I want to have a think about that.
Yeah, fair enough.
And this is a quick little thing I wanted to throw into the mix. Tweet of the week. Little feature I just thought, phase two.
Well, can we get a little soundbite? like a little bird noise.
And there's a couple that have made it. Real spoilers, but we're nominating Skip the End for the presidents of the Josh Gad fan club. Yeah. And they actually tagged him in. Was amazing.
Did old Joshy G come back to
us? He didn't favourite. He's probably just busy.
Interesting.
Don't know. He's not going to say. And a big shout out to Sarah_Buddery, who did a article on the top 5 podcasts that you really should listen to.
Uh-huh.
And she chose us as one of them.
What number?
It's not in any order.
Should have been number one.
And she gave a massive shout out to us. So if you go on Google and type in Sarah Saw a Movie, she's done a really nice write-up about us. And I just wanted to give her a bit of, thanks very much.
Thanks, Sarah.
Right, number
we
one.
Love that. And before I forget, on the last episode of Phase 1,
mm-hmm.
I even gave a question. I just thought, fuck it, I'm going to ask a question. I asked, what film would you pick and what director would you choose to watch that film with?
Yeah.
Did you guys bother to do this?
Of course.
Good. First, Ben.
I had an answer, which I'm not going to tell you, because I've changed my answer since we did this podcast today. I would watch Battlefield Earth with George Lucas and say, here's your mate. He got an Oscar working with you. Look at this shit he's done. What do you think of this? Are you going to recommend him again, are you? You did. Shouldn't have to.
We can make that happen. We got Tommy Wiseau. We can do this.
One day. Oh, that'd be good, watching The Room or Battlefield Earth with Tommy Wiseau.
That'd be good.
Yeah. But I think I'd probably go for... obviously, you guys know I like my comic books, I like my comic book films. We were lucky enough to actually have an interview with Holly Payne and John Schnepp, who did the fantastic documentary Death of Superman Lives.
Yep.
So I'd be very interested in watching some of the comic book movies with John as a director and seeing his take on it. Specifically things like, Amazing Spider-Man, Batman and Robin, the ones that are specifically hailed as some of the worst of all time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think maybe something like Batman and Robin with John Schnepp.
I've heard he's got some particular opinions on that, so that'd be interesting.
Do you know what I'd do right now, thinking about it? I would get J.J. Abrams, and I'd watch the original Star Wars with him, just to watch him fucking geeking out and showing bits that I've never seen before, and him just literally going off on one about how incredible it is and just how he's taking the inspiration from it. It'd be amazing. It'd be fascinating.
He'd be going, oh, that R2-D2 shit. He doesn't like a football.
Yeah. I can't sell toys like that for 200
Where
quid.
Where are the Dutch angles?
Where are these Dutch angels? This is what this film needs. Get those Dutch angels involved.
Yes, we've come down to Earth. Where's your good weed?
Or I'll just pick John Carpenter in The Thing and ask him every single question all the way through and annoy him.
Yeah.
That would be incredible. Poster competition as well.
Yep.
They can't forget that.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've got... obviously, there's a bit of cheating going on here.
I'll tell you what.
Let me explain.
Yeah, let's see who won.
So we set the challenge to basically pick our favourite poster. And then we did it,
second favorite, I won.
So we had round two.
Yeah.
And I think, Adam, you chose John Carpenter's Halloween.
Yeah.
Very iconic. Poster. Ben, what was the one you chose?
I chose Fritz Lang's Metropolis poster, Art Deco poster. Stunning.
And I chose Star Wars Episode One with the shadow being Darth Vader from the little twat Anakin.
Yeah.
Now, do you want to know the results?
I think I probably already know.
I think I know them too. And we'll explain why in a minute.
So, Twitter, Halloween got 4. Ben, yours got 6.
Yeah.
Mine got 16.
Yeah.
Instagram, Halloween 28. Yours, Ben, 13. Mine, 34.
Mm-hmm.
And on Facebook, I can't believe this, Halloween didn't get anything. Ben, yours didn't get 4. Got 4. And mine got 19. So in a total, Halloween 32. Ben, yours 23. And I keep saying Ben, yours, because I can't pronounce the film title.
Metropolis.
How is that difficult? That's okay. And mine got 79.
Yeah.
Absolutely smashed you both.
Should we explain why?
Little losers.
Because all the pictures you put up on these various social media websites, you hashtag, as we expect.
One hashtag.
Yeah, one hashtag for each film.
So it's
your hashtag.
What was mine?
What was Adam's hashtag?
Hashtag. Halloween.
Halloween.
Relevant on the 31st of October.
Relevant once a year. What was my hashtag? Say the word.
Hashtag, I'm not going to say it.
Metropolis. Hashtag Metropolis. When's that ever going to catch anyone's attention?
You never know.
What was your hashtag, Mark?
Hashtag Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly. On what day did you put that hashtag out?
The day that the toys went live.
Yeah. Incredibly popular day for Star Wars.
I think it was called Force Friday or something.
Of course you were going to get more bloody likes than we were.
He put it up as hashtag Star Wars on Force Friday.
Yeah.
But we did get, if you look on Twitter, loads of people just commenting saying, I totally think Star Wars. Oh, when the options, definitely Star Wars. It's iconic. It looks fantastic.
He's making it up. He's making it up. That is not attributed to anyone. He's making it up.
Who said that?
Loads of people.
Names.
Names.
Do you want me to go on Twitter now?
Yeah.
All right. Are you serious?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
you've got to get the names right first.
Oh, fucking hell. This will take ages. Give me 1 second. Right. Okay, then. Rich Walker put The Phantom Menace. Such a cool teaser poster. I had it on my wall for a long time. Yeah. Shame about the film. AB Films put... Oh, Halloween. Okay. okay. Ian Nesbitt put Definitely Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Ian O'Hara put Phantom Menace. Awesome poster. Crappy film. Sonia HW put Star Wars Episode 1. Love the idea of the Anakin Darth Vader shadow.
How do we know you're not just looking down the list of our followers and saying, yep,
I'm reading our feed right now. Lee Teasdale, it's got to be Star Wars. Look at Darth Vader in it. Unbelievable. But then they didn't listen and said they fucked it up. Peter Zeke, Phantom Menace, loads. I can go all day, honestly. John Brooks, episode one for sure.
The lack of love for Metropolis makes me think that our fans don't love silent German cinema, which shocked me to my very core.
We need to start promoting like hashtag German sausage and hashtag German.
Where the hell is...
If I was hashtagging looking for German stuff, I'd do that.
Where does German sausage come from?
There's a few for yours, Ben. I'm not joking. There's a couple, but... okay. Well, do you want to do a round three?
Hell yeah.
On the spot right now?
No, we'll come back. We'll bring another poster
next episode. Maybe next episode. Round three.
Maybe episode after. Round three.
Yeah?
And can we pick our own hashtags?
Yes.
One hashtag each.
One hashtag each. Yeah. That's fair.
One hashtag each.
So you film and you hashtag.
Yeah. And that brings us to the end of the first episode of Phase 2 of the Skip to the End podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Going to be plenty more to come in Phase 2, lads.
I know we're having a bit of a laugh with the whole Phase 2 thing.
Uh-huh.
It is sounding a bit pretentious.
Yeah.
Let's drop it. It's just episode 28.
It's year 2. Yeah. It's the second year.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing, baby.
I like year 2. Year 2 sounds all right.
Yeah.
Cool.
So what have we got coming in episode 29? Mark, what are we going to review?
I've got really high hopes for this.
Yeah. Shame.
I think it's going to climb high up in the chart.
Oh, dear.
Everest.
Brilliant.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
It's no joke.
No, I can see this doing really well. A bit like the snowball effect, rolling and a lot of people getting on board. But joking aside, it's got Jake Gyllenhaal. It's going to work.
Probably doesn't turn into another Mr. Freeze pun set.
We'll have to go and see it at the...
Exactly what's going to happen.
Go and see it on the big screen, IMAX. It's going to look awesome.
All right, yeah. Chill out.
Don't be cold with him, you know? Adam, what is our topic next time?
Our topic is what we're going to call top three one-hit wonders.
Yeah.
So any director, screenwriter, actress, actor, whichever, anyone that's put in one great performance in their career, one great script, or one great piece of directing.
Yeah.
Even soundtrack. If they put in one good soundtrack,
Babylon Zoo.
Everything else done has been dreadful.
Spaceman. Yeah, that was
is that from a film?
It can be.
Yeah, fine.
Mac and Me Too. It's going to be the opening credits.
And what's the rewatch, Mark? You've lumbered us with this.
Jack and Jill, the Adam Sandler masterpiece. It's a comedy. I'm actually looking forward to not watching horror for a while. We've watched sci-fi, we've watched horror.
It is a horror. It's a train wreck.
And also everything we've watched recently has been laughable.
So this will be... I'm looking forward to this. I can see you getting very angry.
In all fairness, from the sound of Battlefield Earth and the rewatch there... I don't think Ben was laughing much during that.
Not so
much. We've got Al Pacino playing himself in it. I'm looking forward to it.
I just hope the director's put a lot of Dutch Angels in it.
Kate Holmes too. It's got some great names.
I really hope that Paul Blart Mall Cop's in it. I'll be furious if he isn't.
But it just wouldn't make sense. Obviously, he's president now, so...
He wasn't president then,
maybe
though.
It'll explain the missing link.
This will be how he got from being a mall cop to president. So I assume maybe he ran for Congress. You know, he worked his way up the ladder.
I hope so, at least.
Stay tuned. We're also going to be skipping back in time to 2001... If any of you funny fuckers decide to say A Space Odyssey, I'll murder you dead. Because you know that film wasn't actually made in 2001.
What?
So don't even do that joke.
I thought Babylon Zoo did the soundtrack for that.
And of course, we'll be taking listener questions. We'll have poster competition round three. We'll have prizes.
What do you
mean
we've got prizes? We're going to announce the winner of the bloody digital camera.
Big time. And we'll probably have some else to give away, won't we? Maybe. You know.
Do you know what?
What?
I'm going to say it now.
Yep.
We're going to give some prizes away in regards to the film we're reviewing.
Everest.
We are.
Excellent.
Seriously good prizes.
Good stuff.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Oh, Christ.
And we're doing Fan Movie Fortunes.
Fan Movie Fortunes.
It's the most talk show game shows ever.
Most talk show game show.
Since Catchphrase. Oh, we could do that. Catchphrase.
Oh, yeah, that's coming up. Sounds like a great show, lads. So stay tuned. We'll be back in 2 weeks. Listen, baby. No mountain high.
river wide enough, baby.
If you need me, call me, no matter where you are, no matter how far.
Don't worry, baby.
Just call my name, I'll be there in a hurry. You don't.